A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care-to-be-great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to your... What is this, Thursday? A Thirsty Thursday edition of...
Throwback Thursday. Sorry. It's not Thirsty Thursday.
I never remember what your dumb rules are.
Your dumb weeks of the day?
Your dumb days of the week are that you always name. I can't remember. I'm supposed to go by the ones that you have recommended, and you know
I just go by what all the people go by. Throwback Thursday.
Throwback Thursday. There we go. Let me see here. We got a lot to get through on this show. We got a lot of guests today. Ben Anderson, of course, from KSL Sports, and Jake and Ben on the Zone Sports Network. He's going to break down a little bit of some of the same jazz talk you've heard other places, but I'm sick of the same jazz talk. I want to really know what is going to go on with this team. I want to know what's going to go on with this team. I want to know, and I saw David Locke put up on his podcast. I think he was talking about the kind of like, okay, all these options you want to do with the team, and I just don't know if I feel good about any of them, to be quite honest, which means maybe I just feel like we should just have the whole thing blow up so we can start from the beginning. Look, if you're a fan of a team and the proposition of them being blown up is with good players on it, if that's a possibility, like just get yourself signed up for not even being you won't be excited about your team for a while. So who wants that? Nobody. Well, I don't know. I get worried about the people who say blow it all up.
But you could argue in that instance. You could say, look, we've done this. We keep doing this over and over. We keep getting the same result. Are we fooling ourselves that we think magically this is all going to change in a year? Just keep the same people here, and they'll get better. They'll figure it out.
Right.
You know, so it's a tough line because you know what that's called, right? You've heard that before.
What is it?
Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different
result. Right?
That's called insanity.
See, I always feel like that's one of those fake quotes people make up. Like, Albert Einstein said it, and you go, yeah, I don't know.
Do you know what the fake quote is?
What?
The fake quote is the jack of all trades and master of none.
Okay.
There's actually more to that quote. I don't have it with me off the top of my head.
You know, that's real helpful.
But there's more to the quote, and the idea of actually being a jack of all trades isn't necessarily a bad thing.
No. That's I am totally the guy who, you know, they always say like, "What do you have going on?" I'm the guy who's the jack of all trades, master of none. And I have the mile wide, inch deep kind of situation where it's like I've got a lot of things going on. I could talk to you about everything, just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
I have a story to tell you about everything that could come up, but only a little bit. So there you go. Let's start off the show here. We got to get in. I want to talk a little bit about this this change up of college football scheduling that we're going to start seeing, not just because of BYU going into the Big 12.
Because they're now snobby.
Oh, listen, I'm not a fan of it. Not a fan of any type of snobbery. But I want to just help people recall kind of some of the ideas that went on when BYU and Utah went through this a while back, and Utah State and BYU are going through it now. Both athletic departments, both athletic directors, making it clear today that they are not going to be continuing that series after 2022. And so we'll start there. Let's kick the show off, as we always do, with the cut. Let's just jump right in.
The Unquestioned. Undeniable. Unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
All right, the cut brought to you by Wasatch Medical Clinic. No, JK. Brought to you by University of Utah Health. It'll be at some point, it'll be brought to us. Just, it depends on the day. Wasatch Medical Clinic. But today, University of Utah Health.
Yes.
University of Utah Health to get the same great care that you get for the Jazz, RSL, and the Utes. They all rely on University of Utah Health. uofuhealth.org. That's uofuhealth.org. For more information, Scott, Utah State and BYU canceling out the games after this season for the foreseeable future. With other games, you know, Utah, BYU, you see games on the horizon, but not with this series. And the Utah-Utah State series is obviously not something that's going to happen really anytime soon. So when you see something like this happen, I think less about like whether or not it's a snobbery situation. Obviously, if they go to a nine-team or a nine-game conference schedule in the Big 12, which is what I think people are anticipating for BYU, then you have fewer options.
Right.
The problem is that I still think you can have Utah State as an option. I don't know why everybody just goes, yeah, but you know how scheduling is. You have to have a Southern Utah. You have to have a Utah Tech. You have to have a Weber State. I'm not a huge fan of that. Like, so there are games and teams.
Did you just
that are,
make up Utah Tech?
No, that's a real thing.
Is that like a different
school? No. That's not like when you watch, what's it called? When you watch Friday Night Lights and they have fake schools right. that are on there, they're all, he's being recruited by Texas A&T. I mean, and they're good. And you're like, and the color's just a little off. And you go, what are they trying to say here? I don't know why they can't use the school names in there, but fine, whatever. Utah Tech sounds like a fake school right now.
It's not.
But either way, wouldn't you rather see Utah State play BYU than Utah Tech? Or than, gosh, it sounded so stupid even just saying it like that, right? Or than Southern Utah or Weber State or whomever. I know you have FCS teams that are always in the hopper. Or some, you know, some team that's on there, you go, there are teams on the schedule. Look, what about your South Florida signups that you've got? And you go, look, I'd rather, what's the draw for the South Florida game? What's the draw for some of these games? I still think there's a place. Or am I insane to think that keeping a couple of SEC teams on a schedule, because BYU's out of conference schedule in 2023 is going to be Tennessee at home, Southern Utah at home, and Arkansas on the road. And great, fine. But Utah State could be a part
great,
of that.
Great, fine?
I said great, fine, because you're playing Tennessee and you're playing Arkansas. Great. And normally you play a team like a Southern Utah, and you're going to be in your first year of conference scheduling. Is it because it's harder than an FCS team? It's not a scheduled win? Why do you need to have a scheduled freaking win every time?
Every Power 5 school has to have that cupcake game. You have to. It's like written into the bylaws. So you have to
is BYU too early to count Kansas as a
Kansas has beat people now. Don't knock on Kansas just yet.
They beat Texas. When you say people, you mean Texas, right?
Of course. So you got to have that team. You got to have that team that just you need that week. You just do. There's a philosophy of you know, how you schedule, and everyone's like, strength of schedule is a big deal. But BYU has proven you can't have that murderer's row Power 5 schedule just run the gauntlet kind of program, and that's what they would do if they added more of these teams. Now, I know Utah State isn't a Power 5 opponent, but they're a pretty good opponent, and they're probably good enough to be dumped. That's the reality.
They're too middle of the road.
They're just good enough.
They're enough of a threat.
Yeah.
That you don't want to have them on the schedule.
It's the same reason Utah didn't schedule them. Now, the Utah-BYU rivalry, that's traditional college football.
Sure.
I know there's a rivalry between Utah State and BYU, but it's not the BYU-Utah rivalry. It's just not. There's not even really hatred in that rivalry. So it's not even really a rivalry. But okay. And so you can't. And Utah State, who knows where they go with Blake Anderson? I mean, the first year was pretty darn good. Maybe it gets better. Who knows where? Because Utah State's just a tough program. It's just one of those. It's a stepping stone program for young up and coming coaches, and so it's just hard to really create that continuity. But when you do, Utah State is a tough school. It's a good school.
Let me just tell you. So as of 2023, BYU is going to be obviously in the Big 12 scheduling, you know, system. 2023, it's already set. You're going to have your schedule for the Big 12, and then you're going to have Tennessee, Arkansas, Southern Utah. Fine. 2024, there's decisions that have to be made, and I'm not doing this to go through like every year of the schedule for any reason except for just to say, here's my point. In 2024, right now on the docket, and all these games could be dumped, pushed around, whatever, Nevada, Utah, Wyoming, East Carolina, NC State, Dixie State, a.k.a. Dixie Tech. I mean, what is it?
Utah Tech.
Gosh. All right, so
you can't say Dixie.
No, I know.
Okay.
Well, it's still technically on the schedule as Dixie State.
Yeah.
So okay, in that year where you've got you in 2024, so just two seasons from this fall.
Yeah.
You've got Nevada's gone, Wyoming gone, East Carolina gone. The only one that you're telling me that you'd consider now is that Utah game. I would say you'd have to go to NC State, right? I mean, that's a game you'd why not go to NC State? And then Utah Tech.
Hold on just a minute. What happens when Texas and Oklahoma leave the Big 12?
What do you mean what happens?
Well, what happens to them?
They go
to the SEC.
I guess
you have four new teams, right?
Right. It's going to be 12. It's going to be 12.
There'll be 12 schools.
Yes. And so, but they're going to play 9 on that conference schedule. So out of the 6 games that are already scheduled, out of the 6 games already scheduled, you have to dump 3 of these. Nevada, no point. Wyoming,
Why not? Sorry about that.
No.
Wyoming's an old salty dog.
Come on, I know.
That's the one you want.
The key term is salty and nobody cares. And it's in Laramie. That's when you dump that one.
It's Laramie?
Yes.
Yeah, you get rid of that game.
So, and East Carolina is an absolute, like that. I would go the rest of my life. If you're a BYU fan, You can absolutely relate to the fact that you could never see East Carolina for the rest of your life, and it would be too soon. So East Carolina gone, Wyoming gone.
East Carolina's been a good team before.
I don't care.
Why do you not like?
It's not that I don't care.
So
it's not that
hateful.
I don't. No, you have to get you
Nevada,
have to get smart.
Come on,
about
that's a school that produced Colin Kaepernick.
I'm just telling you,
Nevada produced Colin Kaepernick.
That Utah, NC State, and Dixie State. Utah Tech are those three schools are the ones that are going to survive in 2024. But in 2025, you only have 2 games on the docket right now on the schedule that you're signed up for, Stanford and Utah, and they're both at home. So then you can why not? You're playing in Provo this year, right? Am I insane for thinking you're playing in Provo? You've got Stanford
playing who in Provo?
Utah State, sorry, and then you're playing Stanford and Utah, both at home in 2025. Give them that return trip in 2025 up in Logan.
Utah State.
Yes.
Well, they've already said they're ending the series.
I know, but that's what I'm saying is why.
Oh, you want to keep it.
Yes, it's so much better to have a game like that than it is to go. I get trying to go
Alex,
after.
Alex, when you become a big-time program, You only have enough.
Oh, I haven't learned the ways.
You haven't.
I haven't learned the snobbery.
No, you only have room for one of your in-state rivals. That's the rule. You either take Utah or you take Utah. Utah understood this. They figured it out. They go, all right, we'll play BYU.
I guess.
Now
sometimes.
If they when they feel like it.
Right.
That's the whole thing. It's gotta be when you feel like it. When you're kind of up to it.
There are games that are on the schedule that you cannot miss out on. At Miami and Miami coming back to Provo, those are in you keep those.
Well, of course you do.
But even like you'll have to make a decision on whether or not you want to play Arizona.
I wonder if you keep those games though in the future. I wonder if you get into the Big 12 and you go, wait a minute, this is a bigger animal than we ever thought. We need to bring back Utah State. Maybe we need to Maybe we need to just get one Power Five school.
Dump USF. You don't need to play. Here's what, like, I'm looking even further into the schedule, and all these, they had all these agreements with Pac-12 teams that are, of course, all dependent on. I mean, you can say all the contracts had in them. I mean, that's what Tom Holmoe did. He went into these places and said, by the way, this could change if we get into a Power Five conference, and people said, yeah, that's fine. And so when you have a schedule like 2026, for example, where you have Arizona, Miami, Virginia Tech, South Florida, Stanford, Utah. Those are six games on your schedule, and you're going to have to dump three of those.
Maybe.
Or four.
Maybe
or,
BYU should go with this strategy. Okay? This is a strategy.
What's the strategy?
Because Utah tried to do this. It didn't work, but they tried to do it. Is make your other in-state rival irrelevant. So don't play Utah at all. In fact, keep your Utah State rivalry, and you just don't play Utah. And you just say, you're just not important enough for us. Because if you look at these conferences, Big 12, like, it's big, right? And the Pac-12 is kind of packing it in because it's just not a great conference. It's just not a great conference.
It's packing it in.
Packing it in. But the big, you know, the Big 12.
The big is big.
It's big.
The pack is packed in.
I mean, you've got a lot of schools in Texas, and everything in Texas is bigger.
Got it.
So just try to make them irrelevant. You know, just like, you know, we really don't have time for you. And if you really want to make them irrelevant, play Southern Utah and Utah State and not Utah.
Southern Utah, Utah State, not Utah.
Yeah.
See, but I'm just saying, I'm looking at the schedule going out into the future. Would you give up big games like a Miami, like they have on the schedule? They have all these games that are lined up in the future. That they have Ole Miss. They have Ole Miss on the road. They have Ole Miss coming to Provo.
I say,
you dump all those games because you're going, look, we're getting into an insane schedule here. You can't have three giant powerhouse, big-name teams plus your Big 12 schedule. That's too much. But I would much rather have a Utah State on the schedule during the season where you're able to say, we know that we're staying here in state. They're already going to have a massive travel schedule in the Big 12. Huge travel schedule in the Big 12.
I don't know that you can answer that question today. And I don't know you can answer. If everything stayed the same, if everything was like, the playoffs didn't expand and everything stayed the same, I would get rid of those big games. I'd play Utah State. I'd play, the Southern Utahs. I'd play Liberty again, or not even Liberty, but, you know, maybe UMass. I mean, maybe I'd go find Connecticut and play them, play UConn. Because if you're in a Power Five conference and you win the conference, you're going to be in, and you don't have losses, and potentially BYU could, like, have no losses if they, you know, because I don't know how good the Big 12 is going to be as far as competition. Without Texas and Oklahoma, it's kind of anyone's game. So if you're playing to play and get into playoffs and have an undefeated season, I'd have an easier preseason non-conference schedule.
The thing is, aren't,
I mean, right now they have these big names because they're an independent.
Aren't these looking like, I mean, doesn't it look like to you, Scott, that these are, that the college football is moving in such a direction that, why does it even matter that you know, these in-state rivalries, for example, because if there's going to be, if the state of college football changes completely over the next 5 to 10 years with the college football playoff expanding, but also with the possibility of, you know, we've seen the super conference that people have talked about, which I think that you and I have both looked at and said, yeah, we're moving in this direction. But does it mean that going forward, games like Utah State aren't going to matter? Games like Colorado State aren't going to matter because they're going to be playing a different version of college football and a different round robin of how you're going to get yourself to the college football playoff. Then maybe that formula changes a little bit. Once you're in the Big 12, if you're BYU, whatever version of the possibility of a massive super conference ends up happening, you're going to just be subjected to whatever the new standard is on how to get to that college football playoff. And that's usually set by, I mean, college football sort of dictates that by the way that everybody else sort of schedules. Everybody schedules a cupcake. Everybody schedules kind of some big name, non-conference games so they can maybe get on the map when it comes to a TV deal, and then they have their conference schedule. How does the future of scheduling look when you already just say, hey, Utah State, thanks but no thanks? I mean, we could really see a future where BYU and Utah just really go, hey, after this next group of games that we're playing here for the short term here through 2026 or whatever it is, maybe after that, then it takes a significantly long break. I know that people say they want to see that game, but once BYU gets a 3 or 4 years in the Big 12, and they go and they pull what Utah does and say, we're kind of focused on this thing over here. We need to win a conference championship, and you guys have. I'm starting to see more and more what those Utah fans are saying. It wasn't just snobbery. It's 100% just out of necessity. It's just like, well, no it's not
some
all
snobbery.
I know it works well, but it's like it's a byproduct of it, though.
It was the idea was BYU wasn't in a Power Five conference,
right?
Like they were like independent. Seriously, you're going to languish in obscurity.
How terrible is independence has been bad, but they've managed.
Well,
it.
I don't think you would want. I don't think you'd want to do anything with your schedule. I mean, I think it's really hard. Things feel like they could dramatically change once this new television deal comes into college football, and it just, you know, they're going to expand the playoffs. And what does that look like, and how do you compete for that? Because you want to compete for that if you're in a conference,
right?
If you're BYU, you do. And the same thing for Utah. So I don't know that you'd want to pin yourself down anywhere with anyone. And I think other schools would understand that.
I just want to know where, like our fans, does this make them really sad? Does Utah State really look at BYU and go, nice job? Remember when people were asking for the legislature to get involved with Utah and BYU, and they're like, this is a tradition. We need to have this thing done. We got to make a state law that says that you have to play this game, or at least get involved to say you have to put them on the schedule. And the reality is that
if BYU and Utah were in the same conference, yeah, it would be very significant.
They're dating different people.
The longer they go in new directions, the less meaningful that tradition.
You can't hang out.
Happens.
We're dating different people now. We're dating different people. You can't hang out. Sorry.
No.
Just not part of it. And I know that it sounded a little bit – people are like rubbed the wrong way that BYU thanked the Aggies for scheduling them during the independent years. Thank you so much for letting us thanks for just – for loving us during that difficult time. Yeah. We want to say, hey, Aggie fans, thank you so much. Like on those cold nights, you kept us warm. And sure, I told my mom that you were the one.
I think it's kind of mean.
No, it's not.
Yeah,
it's not mean.
BYU just used Utah State. I think it's mean.
I'm looking at Jeremy at this point.
Yeah.
Scott's trying to play me. I'm not doing this. I'm not looking at Scott right now.
They
can't look at you because I know you're trying to play me.
No, I'm not.
This is mean. You shouldn't do this.
They shouldn't do
Utah
that.
Has not even looked in the direction of Logan they got into the Pac-12.
Right. They said, hey, sorry. We're out. We're done.
So we've been stringing on.
Yep.
BYU fans have been stringing along Utah State.
Yep. It's mean.
They just kept the dream alive for him. All right, let's take
mean.
A break. When we come back, we got Tom Murphy from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette coming on with us on the program. He's the Arkansas beat writer. We're going to get an idea on this Razorbacks team that, frankly, when they put this on the schedule, I don't know if anybody saw Arkansas turning it around and having the success that Sam Pittman, the head coach at Arkansas, has had so far. I mean, it's been really good for the folks there in Fayetteville, Arkansas. So we'll get some thoughts on this team that's going to be coming to Provo this fall on October 15th. We'll take the break here. We'll come back. We'll talk with him, and we'll get a little bit of an idea. We've got more to go here on the program. Full show, massive amount of guests. Ben Anderson's going to come on a little bit later. Mitch Harper's going to come on. We're just going to talk all sorts of fun stuff today. So stay right here with us. It's Unrivaled 97.5 1280, The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on kslpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Attention.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back. It's 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network, powered by KSL Sports. Hey, if you miss any portion of our show, you can always download the podcast wherever podcasts are found. Download the KSL Sports app. You can get every show all day long streaming live, but also you can get the podcast version of all the shows as well. So no reason you should miss any portion of any day of The Zone Sports Network. Spring is right upon us. We are in the middle of it. Are you looking for that new look for your home? RGS Exteriors and Construction can give you that new look with the stucco, brick, vinyl, or James Hardy siding that you want and love. Get that new look for this year by calling 280-3110. That's 801-280-3110, RGS Exteriors and Construction. Joining us right now on the program, Tom Murphy from the Arkansas Democratic Gazette, joining us as a Arkansas beat writer. Of course, BYU facing the Razorbacks on October 15th in Provo. Tom, that should be a fun trip. Have you ever been out to Utah?
Hey, good to be with you guys. Yeah, I've been there a couple times. In fact, I was out there last summer for a few days, and on July the 4th, there was a microburst of some kind, a big storm. If y'all were out there that day, you might remember.
We have microbursts all the time, so I get the dates mixed.
If it rains like once a year, that's a big deal.
We're pretty
deal
excited
here.
To hear about it. Yeah. Well, so dreadful. But
it was a windy day that day, and I was hoping to see fireworks, but I was told there would be no fireworks, so I got none. I went to Louisiana Tech the same exact time in class as Karl Malone.
Oh wow!
And when he was
nice.
A player for the Jazz, I went out there once to cover a game at Utah State. And we went, and the Jazz were playing, and so we went to a home game, and I went, got to the locker room, and got to say hi to Karl Malone.
Well, that's
so
where
July,
that's where our
July 20,
are.
Yeah, July 24th is a big holiday in Utah. It's when they settled the state, and of course, Karl's birthday's on July 24th, and he had been drafted, came to Utah on his birthday, and they thought, or Karl thought they had created this big parade just for him.
Right.
I think they didn't ever tell him it wasn't for him. So to this day, he thinks that
he's riding. He's running a big old car with Larry H. Miller, who owned the Jazz at the time. You know, and he's like, I can't believe they threw this huge party for me. We probably like that story's been overdone. I don't know how much he actually really thought that, but it's always fun to imagine Karl going. Karl Malone loves Utah. Karl Malone has a birthday, and Utah celebrates Karl Malone's birthday, and there you go. So we're excited about this matchup between BYU and Arkansas. It's one of those that you never see. I don't know how many times in the history of these two teams they've ever met, but certainly coming out to Provo, when this was put on the docket a few years ago, I think people looked at it and went, well, out of all the SEC teams, it's nice to get Arkansas coming in, but now things have changed quite a bit with Sam Pittman turning that program around. What do the Arkansas Razorbacks look like in 2022?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And had this game been 2 or 3 years ago, you know, there would have been a bloodletting out there. And they were that horrible. They were the worst team in the SEC. And lo and behold, in 2022, Pittman takes over the team, didn't even have the regular type spring and then summer because of COVID. And they go out and lead Georgia, you know, which had national championship aspirations at the time. And had a lead on them at halftime. So it was an immediate turnaround. It started with the belief that they could win football games, even though they were much the same roster. And so with Felipe Franks transferred in, they won 3 games. And then last year, of course, they won 9. KJ Jefferson is the real deal at quarterback. He's a great dual threat. They have a really good run game. 3 of their top running backs are returning, and Dominic Johnson and Rocket Sanders and A.J. Green. Obviously, they're going to miss Treylon Burks, a huge, huge weapon. you know, much like BYU won't have Tyler Allgeier. He was a guy who could beat man coverage. When you, they showed his clips on draft day, you know, he was running by Alabama defenders. So, they'll have to find a guy. And I would think by the time the BYU game rolls around, they might have identified a guy or two, but they're just kind of like a no-name defense. They're just going to be solid. They're just a tough team to beat. They're not a spectacular team, but, I expect the game against BYU to be, you know, a really great intersectional game.
I'm curious about like SEC football in general. And, you know, out west, and there's a lot of debate, like, with the Pac-12, and they just can't seem to get folks excited about it. What is it about the SEC? And, you know, Arkansas is, you know, they have a great tradition. What is it about SEC football that people are so nuts about?
You know, that's a great question. And I guess it's almost like the Saturday religion. I mean, I've been out west a bunch, and on Saturdays people have – other things they do, but a large percentage of the communities, even if they're not big football fans, the things that their families and their friends are doing are based around watching the game a lot. Okay, so a higher percentage of people on the Saturdays build what they do around their team's game. And if I'm not covering a game, I'm watching the rest of the country and the rest of the SEC. So it's just it's just the fall religion around here, and I would love at some point in my life to travel the rest of this country, the Northwest and all, in the fall because it's so spectacular, but I haven't got the opportunity to do that because I'm covering football games.
Well, and you know, we were I don't know, we've covered a lot of games here out west, and I've lived in the South, and Scott, of course, played in the NFL kind of all around, and so watched kind of the different regions and how they did take it. And, yeah, there's just a cultural – there's a cultural Saturday thing that goes on in the South that is just an insane amount of resources poured into it. And then people love to just say, "Well, it's because they got nothing else going on. That's the only game in town, literally." And you go, "Well, that's part of it, but at the same time, like, these programs pour resources in, and all the there's a reason that you have a couple SEC teams every year in that college football playoff because they take it more seriously." And so until these programs, and I think that there are teams in California and there are Pac-12 teams that will never have this commitment and will never have the resources to be able to throw at these teams. And so there's always going to be, you know, these teams in the South are always going to outperform, and the SEC is always going to outperform, you know, places like the Pac-12 and even, you know, a lot of the rest of the country, because the cultural identity of folks in the South has to do so much with college football. And so Arkansas is one of those places that people just live and die by the Razorbacks, and it certainly has been nice to see them turn it around, because it's always good to have a team come in that, you know, it'd be nice to think to yourself, oh, yeah, BYU could beat Arkansas. But these are both two teams that have trended up in the last couple of years. What do people there look at that game, that BYU game on the schedule, and think about the Cougars?
Yeah, very, very tough. And you know, you gave me a lot to chew on right there, but I'm going to take it in this direction. The Razorbacks, their schedule is going to be so tough that BYU is another game. I'm an AP voter, and I track all the teams every week, and I had BYU higher than a lot of people for much of the last couple of years. It's 21 wins the last 2 years, tough to beat at home. They're just going to be a solid team. You want to talk about a team that puts a lot of resources and effort into their football program? BYU's it. I'm excited to go out there. Here's Arkansas' schedule, if you guys haven't looked at it. They open against Cincinnati, which was in the playoff last year. They have Bobby Petrino and Missouri State. You want to talk about getting worked up. Even though they should beat them,
right,
they're going to do things offensively that are going to rack up some numbers on Arkansas, I would think. The other non-conference games are BYU and Liberty, and I noticed that BYU is playing Liberty.
Yep.
I love the fact that BYU in 2020 played game like, oh, you guys want to play this year during COVID? We'll go play you. They went and they played Coastal Carolina. I love that. I don't know if any other school capitalized on what was happening that year more than BYU, and I really respected that.
You know, we were the same way. We were like, well, at least our football game's being played because there was that part of it. But, you know, yeah, but then there's the part where you go, oh, boy, here we are in 2022, and they got to do a return trip to Liberty out in Lynchburg, Virginia, which everybody's looking at going, I mean, the only way you can buy tickets to that stadium is to get season tickets, and a bunch of BYU fans bought season tickets to Liberty so that they could get tickets to that game out there.
Wow, that's a great note. I did not know that. And Hugh Freeze, so here's their schedule. It's SEC schedule, Cincinnati, at BYU, Missouri State, and then they play Liberty here. And it's another offensive guru. Hugh Freeze had Arkansas's number, basically, when he was at Ole Miss. So, I don't know. I see people like, oh, Arkansas's a dark horse, you know, title contender in the SEC. They could go 10-2. Are you kidding me? The breaks that they're going to have to get and staying healthy, because they don't have the depth that other SEC teams have still, although they have decent depth. To go 10-2, you want to talk about a run of breaks. For them to go 10-2, it would be a massive season.
NIL is a big deal these days. The transfer portal. What kind of impact has that had on the program?
Great question. And the question you had a minute ago, I was going to funnel into that. You want to talk about our SEC kind of having a leg up on some areas of the country? This NIL has opened things. In the last two or three weeks, I've read stories about how things need to be contained. But it's already out of the bottle, man. the Texas A&M recruiting class it was stunning. And now you read stories about how there's like what consortiums of boosters that are setting up. That's not the way it was intended to be. Now, I don't know exactly what's happening at all these schools, but they all had great recruiting classes. Arkansas had a good recruiting class. Their NIL is up and running. I'm not naive enough to think that, you know, they're not doing things that other schools are, but I think they tried to set theirs up the right way, that it wasn't supposed to be, you know, these built-in lures. But anyway, the NIL has gone pretty well for Arkansas. The athletic program's in good shape. I mean, you look, their baseball team's number four in the country. Their softball team just won the SEC and should be a high national seed. They're doing quite well with the NIL.
What about the transfer portal?
You know, mixed bag. They lost two DBs, both to LSU, and they were both Louisiana-based kids.
Well, they're both starters too. Like, what, usually you leave because you're not starting. Like, what the heck?
Yeah, I don't know the whole story behind why Joe Fouché and Greg Brooks Jr. Greg Brooks Jr. has a family, long story short, that did not like that he got benched. And they had a freshman nickelback came in and started three games in a row because Brooks wasn't being physical enough and tackling. And when the season was over, I think his mind was made up. Mm. Fouché, I thought, would come back. But the fact they've transferred to LSU, pretty big loss. I mean, Arkansas got a DN named Landon Jackson, didn't go through spring, who was at LSU. Their receiver, Jaden Hazelwood, keep that name in mind. If they find a guy who can replace Burks's numbers, I think he's the closest they've got. He was a five-star kid from Georgia. You know, didn't have great numbers at Oklahoma, but we saw him in the spring, and he's got great hands. He's got a nice loping stride that he doesn't look like he's running fast, but he is. So I think he might wind up being KJ Jefferson's top one or two or maybe three targets.
Tom Murphy, Arkansas Democrat Gazette. He covers the Arkansas Razorbacks, BYU versus Arkansas here in Provo. Stunning place to watch a football game. We're excited to have you come down, Tom, and we'll say hey when you come into town. So we appreciate you coming on the program.
I'm jacked up about it, man. If you guys can think, reach out to me again week of or something
Absolutely.
Like that. We'll talk again.
Absolutely.
We'll give you a July 4th report
we'll
on fireworks.
we'll tell you what the microburst situation's like if we're expecting anything. We appreciate it, Tom. We'll talk to you again.
You bet you guys.
All right. There you go. Gosh, don't you get love guys from the South way better than just like your regular family and friends?
No.
He says he's jacked up for that game. I'm like, I'm jacked up to meet Tom Murphy now.
Well, There's a southern sappy way, you know, that's like,
are you saying it's fake?
Well, a little bit, but then there's a genuine side to it.
Oh, for sure.
That was very genuine.
I know. That's yes. What I'm saying. Like, yeah. I think Tom's, do you think that guy enjoys his job? I
mean, he's my new best friend now.
I'm telling you, when BYU signed that game up, we looked at it and went, ooh.
Oh, it's like a lower end. SEC school, you know, this very winnable
right.
game.
The same thing happened when they scheduled Mississippi State.
Yeah.
And they beat them in Provo, and then they got them the next year, or 2 years maybe after that, down there at Mississippi State with those stupid cowbells that they ring the entire freaking game.
It's a thing. Gotta get over it.
It's like one of the only stadiums that they allow artificial noisemakers still, because it's part of the it's part of the experience, I guess. It made my experience horrible. Either way. Okay. We'll take the break here. We'll come back. We've got our market update around the corner. We've also got a what are the odds you don't want to miss. So stay right here with us. It's 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
What are the odds?
Okay, sir, the bet is to you.
All in, baby!
You'll know exactly. More or less. What's going to happen? This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. I love that I can walk into a store in 2022 and I can see, it used to be that you'd see a mannequin that, like, you'd go, well, I'll never look like that. But now they basically took my body and they're all, we need you to look weird. We need you to look a little bit chunky and then put these clothes on. I love it. There's mannequins that look exactly like me now. And I'm like, now I can see what clothes are going to look like.
So did you model for like a mannequin?
No, but they're all, they were like, we're going to need some love handles over here. I want the shirt to fall a little bit weird around the love handles. Just so people can see, just so Alex can see what he's going to look like. Anyway, we have that discussion all the time in my house. It's like, I said, well, because that's why they have these mannequins, honey. Because they want to make sure that I know what I'm going to look like. Dow Jones Industrial down 103 points today. The NASDAQ up 6 points. And the S&P 500 down 5 points. So there's your market update brought to you by TriDayTrading.com. Got ourselves a what are the odds here? What are the odds? Goes like this. We give you a scenario. And then you tell us a 0 to 100% chance that thing will or will not happen. Scott, bonus points if you can give a jersey number that's associated with that. So let's go quickly here. Let's get through a bunch. You ready for this?
Yeah, I'll just throw out a number.
What are the odds the Utah Jazz have more than one all-star next year?
Donovan Mitchell, 45%.
I'm going to go a little bit lower.
They're going to have Rudy and Donovan. They're going to be here next year.
Okay.
Two.
Does that mean they're going to make the all-star team, though?
Ooh. Yes, because the all-star game is in Salt Lake.
Oh, so they get a free pass then?
Yes.
I'm going to say it's a George Niang 31% chance.
Wow. I didn't even know
well,
that.
Well, what
was
is he number? At the 76ers, though? I don't know. Nah. I don't care. Actually, yeah. You know what? Mark it down for I don't care what number he is at the 76ers. What are the odds, Scott, that college football and basketball players are going to end up being paid employees by the universities by 2030? It's been proposed.
2030?
Yeah.
That's an arbitrary number.
Well, it's because there's some TV deals and things like that that need to kind of come in. But I just don't know. Could you imagine getting the – because they used to have it listed. All the coaches make this and the university employees. Wouldn't it be funny to see the university employees' salaries listed on there? And it's like, Coach Kyle Whittingham, $4.5 million.
Do you know what that will do, don't you?
Craig Smith, $1.5 million. And then it's all – Britton Covey Jr., $1.1 million. Like, you know, I mean, just to imagine these guys as being paid university employees or state employees if you're a state university, pretty wild to think. But, you know, in the end, these schools can give these guys these academic bonuses if they hit these milestones or whatever.
So if this happens,
yes,
then guys will just bypass college and go to the pros. I mean, that's what I think. I don't know that you know they're ready for it, but
why is it that they force you to stay out of the NFL? The NFL could improve their stock.
It has to be related to the revenue that college football generates. So
NFL would. Why do they care? I mean, I'm saying the NFL could say, hey, you can stay out two years now.
Because they don't want to look. It's part of developing players for them. It's very helpful, and it is. But it's also, look, we understand you make a lot of money. We don't want to We don't want to poo-poo your business. What's the
What are the odds?
I just don't see this
I don't see it happening either.
Joe DiMaggio, 5%.
Zach Wilson, 2%. What are the odds that that you give two poos about the NFL schedule being released tonight? You gonna watch the NFL release tonight in earnest? Or?
Do you know the game? Here's the game that I love. I love the opening, like the opening game.
Yeah, that Thursday game usually.
Whatever that is. That's just always an exciting game for me. And then every Sunday night game. I think Sunday night football.
But aren't they on a flex schedule? We won't know what they are.
I know.
Right?
That's why it's like.
It doesn't matter.
No.
Yeah, we'll know what the first few are. But
which is why I like Sunday night. So I look forward to Sunday night.
I just can't wait to see when.
So
Russell
will
Wilson...
I watch the schedule release tonight?
Yeah.
That would be Devin Lloyd, 0%.
You've got shows to binge on Netflix. You don't have time for this.
Well, you throw me on these Derry girls or
yeah,
whatever they are from Ireland.
I got him. I preach the gospel about the shows that I watch. You know, and I tell people, you got to see this. And then they get wound up in it. And they're not even necessarily good shows, but I get you hooked. Start watching Selling Sunset. You'll hate yourself in no time.
I'm not going to do it. That one I'm not going to do. But Yellowstone's good.
Ozark. Yes.
Watch the end of Ozark.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a – oh, no, I already gave you a number, didn't I?
No, you
did. You said a 0% chance. I'm going to give it a Kayvon Thibodeau 5% chance. Finally, Scott, what are the odds that the Rams that first game we see on a Thursday night, Tom Brady's going to be in that game?
See, this is the game I'm excited about.
Is Tom Brady going to be that? I would love that if
this is the game.
Is he going to be the lead game on that Thursday night? What are the odds that Tom Brady is on your TV first in the for the NFL season?
I think that's really high. I'm going to go Michael Irvin, 88%.
Because the Rams are already there. They're the Super Bowl champs.
Michael Irvin, 88%.
88%
chance. That's my final answer.
They're slated to play each other. I love it. I'm going to go with a Yeah, I think it's high, but I think it might be a little bit much to try to do right off the bat. No, I'm with you. I'm going to go with a Art Monk, 81%.
Okay.
He was a Washington Redskin, Scott.
Yes, a commander. Commando.
The Commandos. Do you snore at night? Are you currently using a CPAP machine to treat that sleep apnea? SoundSleep Medical can improve your life. Visit SoundSleepMedical.com for more information. SoundSleepMedical.com. Taking the break, we'll come back. When we return, a little discussion to have about Arch Manning and about what his future looks like. If you were him, what school would you pick? If it's between Alabama and Texas, it seems like a no-brainer. But I've got some reasons to believe that none of it actually matters where he goes. Stay right here with us. Unrivaled continues. 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
GS! GS!
The teams you live for. The sports you love.
We're not going anywhere. We ride here.
With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280, The Zone and The Zone Sports Network, powered by KSL Sports. Thanks for being with us. Alex Keery, former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell. On the back of the news of BYU and Utah State ending their football series indefinitely after this season, when do you think it's going to come back? I wonder when it's going to come back or if it will come back ever consistently again. Would it be in Utah or would it be in Utah State and BYU's best interest to figure something out for the long term, or are BYU fans and BYU football looking at it and going, yeah, I don't know. I think I heard it, Scotty saying too, on their show, he said, yeah, I would not be surprised if they did the same thing for basketball. And I thought that'd be a real, now basketball there, it's a little more flexibility, right? I mean, like, there's so many more games you can schedule. You don't get into your conference stuff until usually it's about after Christmas, right? And so that seems like a no-brainer. Like, that one has to get played. That one you got to figure out how to play. You don't want these schools to totally separate themselves and then do this thing where it's like, yeah, well, we don't need you. And because you said you don't need us, we don't need you either.
Well, basketball's different, though, in how basketball, I scratch my head, and that, like, you have quality losses and you have tier one and tier two.
Yeah, the
whatever,
quad. No, it's the
whatever
quads.
Quad, yeah. I got two quads, okay? And they're tight. And they're old.
Oh, we had a nice – we had a quad two tight old win. Yeah, yeah. I'm interested to see how this thing plays out because there could be just a total they might not play nice in the future. I don't know if they will. I hope they do. I hope they play nice. I hope they figure it out.
I think everyone understands the scheduling dilemma everybody has. I don't know that people are all upset or hurt about it. I think they get it. Except for Notre Dame. Notre Dame. Now Notre Dame kind of thumbs up.
Everybody should just like do a thing where go, Notre Dame, thanks for calling. We appreciate your business. We appreciate you, you know, coming around and telling us you want to be a part of this, but I'm not necessarily we can't do this game. We can't figure this thing out. My computer just died. I don't know what's going on here. Let's jump in, though, to the cut. Let's jump into the top of the show, as we always do. We're going to get into this discussion a little bit about Arch Manning. And it's not really about Arch Manning as much as it is about these high-caliber recruits across college football. So let's jump into the cut right here on Unrivaled.
The Unquestioned. Undeniable. Unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
The cut brought to you by University of Utah Health. At University of Utah Health, you get the same great care that the Jazz, RSL, and the Utes all trust. Visit uofuhealth.org. That's uofuhealth.org. As I try to reboot myself over here, Scott. Arch Manning, maybe the top recruit in the history of college football. Scott, am I overstating it? I mean, just because of how much attention that this kid gets. And because 2022 provides so much more of a mainstream way, we can see Arch Manning anywhere we want to go now. I mean, the guy has been recruited more than anybody in the history of college football, I'd say, and he's highly anticipated. The guy is going into his senior year, and it feels like at this point that, you know, we've been waiting to see Arch Manning come around since the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, I think he was determined to be the top high school recruit since the middle of his freshman year in high school, just because of his size. His pedigree obviously is a big deal.
His pedigree.
And that's it.
That's it.
Yeah. And his name's Arch Manning. And he plays at Neumann. So he's trying to make this decision between Alabama. Texas is in the mix for him. And he said he's not necessarily in a hurry right now to make that decision, but he's going to do it in the next, you know, maybe during the season, maybe after the season. That's what he said. Maybe before the season. Who knows? But the reality is that it doesn't matter where he goes. Texas or Alabama, it doesn't matter, because the only thing that matters to Arch Manning, and I'm telling you, we've run more into this and basketball's been dealing with this forever. If there's a version of a guy who wants a one-and-done situation more than anybody, it's you know, these college basketball recruits who are the number one overall guy, who are going to be the guy who are one-and-done. College football doesn't have a one-and-done, but Arch Manning is the closest thing to it. And the reason there are one-and-dones is because these guys in college basketball, they can go immediately into the league, and they can be a number one overall pick or a lottery pick, and they can get right into making money. And Arch Manning, I'm telling you that going to Texas, would you rather, if you were Arch Manning, would you rather go and be this guy who could change the face of Texas football and turn everything around, or go to Alabama, win a national championship? And I just think that no one cares about a national championship as long as he can be the guy who's still the number one overall pick.
See, I think it's different than that, though, because he's a Manning, right? And if you the Mannings do things kind of based on what they're personally feeling, and they kind of all go on their own journey. If you look at, like, Eli followed his dad to Ole Miss. And is Ole Miss, like, the very best place in the country for a quarterback to be? No, it's not.
Worked out for him, though. He's a lottery. He was a, you know, first day.
It was great. Peyton Manning, like, shuns the family. like, is the black sheep of the family and goes to Texas or to Tennessee.
Yeah.
And Tennessee at the time was Tennessee. They were good. He was going to compete for a national championship. Tennessee football, the whole experience, Rocky Top, the, you know, it's a great tradition at Tennessee. And he wanted to win a Heisman Trophy. Yeah, I don't know that Eli really wanted to win a Heisman Trophy. But I think that was something that was a big deal to Peyton Manning. And he stayed the extra year in school. So I think that these Mannings are about the college experience above anything else. They go, look, we know we're going to be pros. We know we're going to be the pros. We're going to be the guys, and we're going to go do the thing. But right now, we got this one shot to be in college. And I think if you look at Georgia, you look at Alabama, you look at Texas, clearly, these are great programs. Great programs. And if you were to ask me which one would better and best prepare Arch Manning to go to the pros, because I think it's one having the college. Okay, if you're going to have the college experience, you know where I think you go? Georgia.
Why? Why would you say Georgia?
I would say the college experience. I mean, you know, maybe Alabama's. You can't go wrong. I think Texas has gotten weird. I think Austin is just kind of weird. I think Texas is a little weird.
Well, they certainly haven't figured things out, but this could be the thing where it turns around with a guy like Arch Manning coming in.
There's a massive question mark at Texas. You don't know. Steve Sarkisian, you don't know. He's been a head coach before, and he's been really good at a coordinator at a lot of places. I mean, he's been in the NFL. He's been at
– Yeah, but does he have to – he doesn't have to – I mean, how many national championships did Ole Miss win when Eli Manning was there?
No, I'm not saying. I'm just saying. I'm talking about the whole experience. You don't want to go to Texas
and have a
coach that's on
Texas
the hot seat, and you're just kind of dealing with.
The reason you don't want to go to Texas if you're Archie Manning, Arch Manning, is you got Quinn Ewers in front of you. Well, and you could beat him out, but the reality is that's another 5-star guy who everybody's been sitting around waiting for, and he's only a year ahead.
Arch Manning, wherever he goes, will be the guy day one.
You think so?
I know so. Yeah, I mean, he's not going to go somewhere where he's not the guy. And then maybe that
helps make the decision for Texas.
I think Alabama is the best place.
You just said Georgia.
Well, no. Okay,
for the experience.
So for the college experience, Georgia.
Why? What would that? What do you know? What goes on in Athens? It's so great.
It's an amazing college experience at Georgia.
Apparently. Why is it better than Alabama?
It just is.
Okay.
It is because Alabama is just, it's you know, they're just, it just is.
Yeah, it just is. Okay. Well, that's
now,
a great idea.
Now, if I'm going to a place and I go, where can I best be prepared to go to the NFL? I say Alabama. I say, and it's not just the coaching. And I you look at Mac Jones. Mac Jones played in practice. That's the other thing. You're practicing against NFL caliber defenders at Alabama. Let alone the guys you have on offense. You know, so you got dudes, right? And you're a dude, and it's like it's a lot of dudes, and so just the like you can't replicate that at very many places in the country. You know, you can't go to Wisconsin and go, okay, every guy on our defense is an NFL guy or every guy on our offense is an NFL guy. And so it's like you're having a mini NFL experience in college, and the competition that you're competing against every day in practice is the best in the country. And that to prepare you to go to that next level, you know, a lot of why Mac Jones, I'm sure, had early success at New England is because he goes, well, shoot, the talent at Alabama might be better than what we have here. And that's not a knock on, you know, New England. But he was better prepared.
If you're Arch Manning, though, I mean, this whole USA Today article that I was that we were looking at having to do with this basically argues, well, if he's able to – he's going to be able to distinguish himself from all of his family – by turning Texas around, going to a different school, turning Texas around, And I just am convinced that it doesn't matter if he turns anybody around.
See, I think it matters to them, Alex. I do.
So there's this piece of them that goes, I'm only going to be here for three seasons, and I might only play two of them, but, man, my legacy is going to be for those 2.5 years at Texas, for those 3 years at Georgia, for those 3 years at Alabama. I just don't think that these guys
– Arch Manning.
The thing that matters the most to him is going to the NFL as the number one overall pick.
Arch Manning might be that guy that says, I'm going to stay 4 years. You know, I don't. I'll get to the NFL when I get to it. I don't need. I'm in no rush. I mean, Peyton did it. If he could go to Texas and turn Texas around and get to. I mean, he would be forever cemented in lure at Texas, and win a Heisman Trophy at Texas. Like that would be a bigger. It would be a bigger achievement. Probably times 10
okay.
than if he did the same thing at Alabama or at Georgia.
Okay, listen to this. The way that it is, his junior year in college, if he's at Texas, his junior year would be when they go to the SEC. Okay? So when Texas goes to the SEC, he'll have already played a couple years against we could say, right. Hey, you know what would be nice? BYU, wouldn't it be fun to see watch BYU play against Arch Manning maybe once or twice?
Yeah.
Be kind of fun.
It would.
But when they go to the SEC, he can immediately make an impact of, I played the Big 12 a couple years, and then I go to the SEC, and then he beats Alabama, maybe he beats Georgia, and he's been warming up against these Big 12 teams, and there you go. But I just think that I think that these kids these days, when we've sat down with guys who are highly recruited out of high school, and they're 4- and 5-star guys. Think about Clark Phillips III, right? When we first sat down with him, what were his aspirations? To be a Ute for life? Absolutely not. I'm going to be here 3 years, and I've got NFL designs. I'm going to the NFL after this, and I'm going to, hopefully we can win a Pac-12 championship. By the way, they already did, right? He's like, well, I want to win a Pac-12 championship, and then I want to go to the NFL. But I am going to graduate in 2.5 years, and he's going to be there, right? He's done all those things. These guys have in their head, I'm going to do these things, and I'm going to the NFL. I think Arch Manning is getting the pressure now. I think when guys have really, really good seasons and they go, I don't have to go to my senior year at Texas to try to turn things around for that program anymore. I can go be the number one overall pick to the fill-in-the-blank team in the NFL and do what my uncle did and say, nah, I don't want to go to that team when they pick me first. I'm going to actually go over to this other team. So I don't think that Arch Manning, one, it doesn't matter where he ends up because he's going to be a first-round and probably likely an overall first pick. That's how good this guy is projected to be. Now, of course, you have to see on-the-field stuff, but you don't even have to see a guy even get close to winning a national championship for him to be in that caliber. And so I think that I do think that there is something to be said about a guy who wants to go off and do his own thing, right? At the University of Utah, Lander Barton is kind of an interesting guy because he comes from a background of a family that is, kind of one of these Utah first families, right? when you talk about people right. who've been, have the athletic prowess, have the dad, the brothers, and now him. But you and I were talking about this, and you were telling me too, you go, Lander Barton is different than these other guys. And so when he came to Utah, it was great, but he's going to be right out of the gate. It's not going to have to be like, I think Cody Barton could be good one day, like his brother. It's Lander Barton is the guy. He could be the guy starting at day one. And he has to figure out how he's going to distinguish himself, right? And so Arch Manning, to me, what's interesting is that there was a guy who did this. Johnny Manziel. He went to Texas A&M and said, I'm going to do something different, and I'm going to take this program that debuted in the SEC, and I'm going to go in there, and he beat Alabama, right, the year that he won the Heisman Trophy. He went in there and totally turned around expectations for this team. Texas was 5-7, and frankly, I can't tell you the last time they were actually any good. The last time they had a first-round draft pick as a quarterback was 2006 with Vince Young.
You're talking about Texas, not Texas A&M.
Sorry, Texas. No, but I know. I'm just saying that what Johnny Manziel did for Texas A&M and what it did for him, now it's a little bit different because I don't think anybody ever looked at him like the five-star NFL guy like Arch Manning is.
I wonder what kind of getting a recruit like Arch Manning, what kind of message that sends to Texas. Texas players, Texas recruits. There just is something weird at Texas. It makes no sense to me. Why this program cannot be just elite all the time. And, I mean, it is the flagship program in the state of Texas. And it's
no good right now.
And it's no good. And you have, you know, Steve Sarkisian. You know, it's funny. Some people are talking about Urban Meyer ending up at Texas. Because I don't know that Steve Sarkisian is the answer there either. I mean, there just seems to be some dark cloud that follows him around, and he's gotten chance after chance after chance. And so I don't know if he was, you know, the best guy or whatever for Texas. It remains to be seen. But Arch Manning, it really boils down to, I think his choice is different depending on what he really wants to do. I think Georgia's the college experience. I think Alabama is the place that would best prep him for the NFL. And I think kind of going out on his own and being his own guy would be a place like Texas.
You're always telling me, like, yeah, but these kids, they want, when they're making this decision, they do want to be singular. They want to be they don't want to be their dad, their grandpa, or whomever. They want to be a little bit different. They want to kind of carve their own path. But I don't know if if he feels like he has the opportunity to take
Level. It's so different when you're on the inside.
If he wins at Alabama, who cares? At it.
But if you're Arch Manning, you look at it and go, "This is my life, right? This is where I'm making this choice. I'm doing this thing for myself." And so you look at it differently than as opposed to when you're on the outside of it going, "Well, this is a no-brainer. I mean, this is where you should go. It's not even a choice." I think of maybe all the places, you know, because you have these kids going, I want to carve my own path, do my own thing, make my own choice. I think more kids go to BYU because of, and I don't want to say obligation, but I think of that legacy thing. I don't think they may want to go somewhere else, but they go, you know, kind of my family and I feel an obligation to come here. I think of all places in the country, I think more of that happens at BYU. There's almost this unwritten, it's a us against the world mentality a little bit, and I have to go and continue the legacy.
I want to see I would love to see Texas turn it around. I don't want to see Texas flail. I think that
I do too.
The best version of the SEC is going to be when Texas hits the ground running. Oklahoma's already a good program. Right, I mean they've been in the college football playoff four times.
Yeah, but they got a crappy defense.
That has never mattered for them. They just like go in, score 48 points, make it a couple more points than the other guy, and then boom, doesn't matter. But Texas is just a head scratcher because they absolutely Texas is a bigger program than Oklahoma inherently. It just is. But the problem is that they haven't played like it in the last stretch of the last decade. They've kind of forgotten who they are, and I think it's better for college football. It'll be better for the SEC to have a way more competitive Texas team. Last thing you want is for them to show up and be number 7 in the SEC standings. But Arch Manning can totally change the way that he is viewed. If he goes to Alabama, I will roll my eyes so hard. The only reason I want him to go to Texas is because it seems like it's more of a challenge. It's the more difficult choice. Make the more difficult choice. And yet at the same time, I want these guys to get a bunch of money.
Be a man. Go to Texas.
That's what people are saying.
That's what
you're
saying.
Hey, kid, you could do the easy thing and go to Alabama. But everybody goes there and wins a national championship. Who cares? Why don't you do something special here in Texas? Hook 'em horns. We'll take the break here. When we come back, Ben Anderson, our Jazz insider for KSL Sports, host of Jake and Ben, of course, every day, 10 to noon right here on the Zone Sports Network. He's going to join us. We have some questions about this Utah Jazz team. Ben will have some answers. Stay right here with us. More to go. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
Attention.
This is Unrivaled.
with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network, powered by KSL Sports. The longest-serving credit union in Utah, Cypress Credit Union. They're here to help you with all your financial needs. Your future is our future, Cypress Credit Union. Joining us on Unrivaled as we get going on some Jazz talk a little bit today. I mean, we've been talking about the local teams that are bagging their football series. We've been chatting a little bit about some college football across the board. Talked to a beat writer from Arkansas. And now we're getting into the Jazz, finally. And one of the things that we've been just wondering over the last couple of weeks, Ben, is where this Jazz team is going to go. But what are all the factors that go into keeping both Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert? Or is it just a singular, can they get along? Or is it more complicated than that?
Yeah, I think that's probably the number one storyline, is whether or not those two can get along. And if they're, you know, both committed to playing with one another. The story that came out, you know, midway through the season was that in January, Donovan Mitchell thought that if the Jazz didn't get out of the first round, maybe there was a chance he was going to demand or ask for a trade elsewhere. We haven't seen that materialize. But at the same point, the story came out from our friend Sean O'Connell right after the season ended that, hey, maybe Rudy Gobert is going to give the Jazz an ultimatum that he's got to pick one or the other. And while he said, you know, it's just a rumor, certainly didn't say that's not what I said. So I do think that's still the main question, whether or not those two want to play together. And then the second's going to come down to whether or not the Jazz think they can win with those two together.
What do you think?
I think they're probably not a great duo together if the Jazz hopes are to win a championship. I don't think those two players, specifically if they're the best players on your roster, are good enough to win a title.
Well, I think the storyline that keeps coming out, I mean, even from the national level, we've been saying it here locally, you've certainly been writing about it too, where, you know, I think that people look and they go, well, if there's going to be a guy, who's the one who sticks around? I don't think it's that crazy of a stretch to say that the guy who scores the most points, sells the most jerseys, and has the big shoe deal would be the guy who I think most people would want to build a team around. And so the prospect of shopping Rudy around, what does that offer the Jazz?
I actually think there's probably a pretty competitive market for teams that are mid-level playoff teams in the conferences or close to, you know, being over the hump and just need one more presence. And the problem is the Jazz probably aren't even quite there, in all honesty. I know they were in the 4-5 matchup. I know they have the best record in the NBA last year. But they're probably closer to the second half, bottom half of the playoffs in the Western Conference, especially going into next year when you look at Phoenix, Golden State, Denver should be healthier and better. The Clippers should be healthier and better. I don't think Memphis is going anywhere backwards. I don't think Dallas is going to get worse. So all of a sudden the Jazz are probably looking at that 6 or 7 spot in the West. And I think that's a hard place to be if you're trying to say, well, you've got a, you know, 2 max players, a maxed out luxury tax salary cap, and you're not going to be really competing for the playoffs or even home court advantage. So one of those teams like the Toronto Raptors in the Eastern Conference, the Dallas Mavericks that we just mentioned, the Golden State Warriors, if they come up short of a championship, they could look at a guy like Rudy and say that might be the championship piece, the missing piece that gets them where they're trying to go.
I think it's Toronto. You just have French Canadians, you know, you have you just have
sure.
Montreal that's kind of close.
Scott's just trying to figure
Toronto.
Out the furthest place away that Rudy after all that.
No, I think it's fascinating to see how this thing's going to unfold. It's kind of a bit of a drama. So Quinn Snyder, you know, he hasn't had a contract extension, and listening to his, I guess, post hip surgery evaluation of the season, didn't really say a lot, but there just was a tone to it to me. And just listening a little bit closer and kind of some of the things he said and didn't say and how he said them, it feels like to me he might be looking to go somewhere else. What are your thoughts on, you know, is he the right fit? Does he go somewhere? Does he want to go somewhere? Where are you on Quinn Snyder?
I think some of that depends on what you do with Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. I would be surprised if you brought all three of them back together. But I don't think the Jazz are trying to push Quinn Snyder out necessarily. So I don't know exactly kind of what the contingency plan or the, you know, what triggers what in the Jazz dominoes coming up this offseason. It does sound like if Quinn wants to come back, the job is his to take. He's under contract for another year, and the Jazz have a deal on the table to extend him. If they do decide to trade Rudy Gobert or Donovan Mitchell, maybe Quinn Snyder's no longer interested in that team if it's, you know, the halfway to a rebuild that's going to get inevitable, and he might lose some of his cachet on the market. We also don't know what jobs are fully going to open up yet. It seems like, you know, the Lakers are going to be making a hire in the next couple of weeks. They're interviewing everybody around the NBA right now. Only the Sacramento Kings have officially made a hire. But we don't know if San Antonio's going to open up yet. We don't know what's going to be out there. So he may just want a year, too, coming off of that hip surgery. He may decide that he wants to sit back and kind of, you know, travel around a little bit, which he's known to do, see other teams, see what's out there, and see if those are possibilities. So it's hard to say exactly what Quinn Snyder's going to do. And if I were to tell you the truth, I don't know if he knows exactly what his plan is.
I love how, like, in the offseason it's turned into, like, the Jazz's big three are two players and their coach, right? It's like, you can't have all three back. Are they going to have all three back? And, you know, it's just, it's a unique kind of discussion to have when you start talking about, and I think it speaks to also kind of the frustration of everybody, where it's just like, anybody's on the table, including the coach. I don't know how to get this thing turned around. But with those three pieces, like, having to figure those guys out, What are some of the other names? I know that Mike Conley's come up as one of those guys, but what are some real possibilities that Jazz fans are going to see of names that might not be back next year that they would go, oh, shoot, I didn't know he was possibly going to be out of here?
Yeah, I would throw Bojan Bogdanović and Jordan Clarkson into that group, because as much as they're fan favorites, as much as they were probably the Jazz two best players in the postseason this year, you've got to get better. It doesn't matter if you're a fan favorite, but you don't win. And I do think that is one of the issues the Jazz are running into, is they recognize, hey, this is a talented group of guys. The offense works. It's number one in the NBA. The defense is top 10, and you still can't get out of the first round. So whatever you've done to build these kind of fun advanced statistics doesn't actually translate to anything meaningful. So you have to figure out a way to flip that on its head. Who cares what your offensive rating is? Who cares what your defensive rating is? If it translates to wins, that's the most important thing. And so they've got to figure out, you know, is there a guy in Jordan that could be had for Jordan Clarkson that'll help you actually win basketball games? And that's not to say Jordan Clarkson doesn't, but maybe he's just too repetitive of what you already have in a, you know, in a Donovan Mitchell coming off the bench, and you need something different. Or does Bojan Bogdanović not give you enough on the defensive end where you could trade him for a couple of pieces that would come in and really kind of push you closer to getting out of the first and second round, having an option to defend on the perimeter and help Rudy Gobert, as opposed to just spacing the floor? Those are the types of conversations they're going to have. And I mean, I know yesterday the report from Bleacher Report was that, you know, it's most likely they're not going to trade Rudy Gobert or Donovan Mitchell. I still got to see what the offers are. And look, there's still, what, 8 teams playing in the NBA right now? Right. So that's more than 25% of the league is still in the middle of their season. Who knows what kind of offer comes down if a team gets eliminated earlier than expected and says, hey, we really want to make a push for it. We love Donovan Mitchell, or we love Rudy Gobert. We have a bank of assets. We have young players. We want to move now because the iron's hot. And the Jazz say, you know what? The likelihood that this team is all together 3 years from now is slim. Let's strike while the iron's hot and there's still an opportunity to kind of salvage pieces on this roster. And that could include Rudy or Donovan Mitchell. I wouldn't rule anybody out as being somebody who gets sent out this offseason.
So Bojan and Jordan are clearly probably the most high-profile guys. But are there some young guys that the Jazz have drafted, developing, that may turn out to be, you know, a missing piece, like Jared Butler?
Yeah, I think Jared Butler's clearly the name. I'll be curious what Nickeil Alexander-Walker can do with the summer with the Jazz. And again, that may depend on, you know, what his development looks like. May depend on whether he's playing for Quinn Snyder or not. And one, to credit Quinn Snyder, one of the things he's done best is develop guards. I mean, he brought in Donovan Mitchell and turned him in from a mid-level late lottery pick to a borderline superstar. He brought Mike Conley in after 14 years in the NBA and turned him into an all-star. He brought in Jordan Clarkson, who was kind of thought of as, you know, a player you don't know if you can win with, and turned him into the sixth man of the year. So clearly Quinn Snyder knows how to get a lot out of guards, and that's a really good sign for Nickeil Alexander-Walker, and it's a good sign for Jared Butler, who I loved coming out of the draft. And if you do trade a Jordan Clarkson or you do trade a Mike Conley, honestly, just giving him 25 minutes a game if they think he's ready for it, you might lessen a lot of that blow, plus whatever you get back for those guys in a trade could actually make you better. So I do think that's where they could bank on some of those players because, you know, Jared Butler is not a one-and-done prospect who's going to take 3 or 4 years to develop. He played, what was it, 3 years at Baylor. He won the most outstanding player in the national championship in the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. It's a lot like Jalen Brunson, and just kind of a really solid guard who excelled in college, can do things on both ends of the floor, can get anywhere he wants with the ball in his hands, and is a really good shooter. I mean, he could really turn into that Jalen Brunson type. And if you were to pair him in the backcourt with Donovan Mitchell, he's got better size than Mike Conley. He probably moves a little bit better than Mike Conley at this point. Maybe there's actually some pluses there where you could get better in some areas, and then Donovan Mitchell carries the rest as a playmaker.
Ben Anderson, you can always hear him every day with Jake Scott, of course, 10 to noon right here on the Zone Sports Network. You can also read his bylines at KSL Sports. What about the young names that are out there? What are the names out there that you go, that you circle and kind of go, that might be with the situation that that their team is dealing with and the situation the Jazz are dealing with? What are some names out there that people might be, surprised that would be a possibility for the Jazz to land that you go, I like that name out there, and it isn't insane to think that they could get here?
Yeah, a couple of names like Pascal Siakam, who was an all-star and the third-best player on a finals team not that long ago, alongside Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry in Toronto, simply because if you're going to trade Rudy Gobert there, you've got to get money back. And Pascal Siakam probably makes the most sense, especially because they have a really nice young rookie in Scottie Barnes who's going to play a similar position. So that's the type of name I would look at, and that's a pretty good complementary star. If you can find another center to put a root with Rudy Gobert, you've got a more dynamic big wing that can play some defense to complement Donovan Mitchell. That's beneficial. If Mitchell were to go out, you'd probably be looking at a team like Miami, and I can't imagine the Jazz would let anyone but Tyler Hero come back to Utah because you need a young player that has upside that could turn into an all-star, and Tyler Hero's probably the guy on that roster that makes the most sense. In Atlanta, DeAndre Hunter, maybe a Clint Capela if you wanted a player like that. Clint Capela is probably just to make them salaries match, but DeAndre Hunter was a top 10 pick not that long ago. Mm-hmm. Jalen Johnson was a first-round pick out of Duke last season and just didn't get on the floor very much because Nate McMillan doesn't play his young guys. Or there's a Danilo Gallinari if you want salaries and you want to have more flexibility. Those are the types of names I'd be talking about, and you know, all of those are very reasonable, high-upside players that could help the Jazz in the future.
Next year, the All-Star Game is in Utah, and there's been a few articles floating around. I believe you've even brought this point up about, does that have any kind of impact on what the Jazz do? Do they hold off on things and just say, you know, what kind of impact would the All-Star Game coming to Salt Lake have on moves this team might make?
I do think it makes sense to have a host, to have a player who's hosting the All-Star Game, and you say, look, this is our guy. Look at how big of a star you can be in Salt Lake City. So even if Donovan Mitchell next year were to ask out or you felt like you had to trade him, then at least you could show the league, look, you can come to Salt Lake City. It's a cool town. You're going to be worshipped here. Donovan Mitchell's picture is painted all over the walls here in Salt Lake City. You can be that guy if you want to come here. And I understand why that would be valuable. The report yesterday from Jake Fisher at Bleacher Report said Ryan Smith prefers to have two guys to really show that off, you know, whatever. Maybe that's accurate. Maybe that's not accurate.
He prefers to have three or four, really. But, you know, you can't really just do that.
Let's not be greedy.
Yeah, have 10 if you can have all the guys. But you're just not going to be there. You're not going to be the, whatever, 2004 Detroit Pistons where your whole starting lineup makes it or whatever it was. So you can have one. I think that actually is important. Charlotte did that with Kemba Walker before they traded him to the Boston Celtics that offseason. And they lost value for him, but they were able to have somebody to put a face to it and kind of say that, hey, this is still a basketball town. We're serious about this. I think there probably is market there. There's marketing value there that probably goes into the discussion that Ryan Smith and Danny Ainge would understand far better than I would. But, you know, at that point, I think you probably don't want to be in a full-blown rebuild with a 25-win team because you traded Rudy, Donovan, Mike, Boyan, Jordan Clarkson, and you have, you know, 15 picks in the next five drafts. I don't think that's necessarily what you want to do with the All-Star Game coming in. Plus, these guys aren't expiring. You know, Kemba Walker was expiring that offseason. That's why there was so much conversation about trading him. Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert are under contract for the next 3 years. Hold on to them if you want to. Get past the All-Star break, and you can trade them next summer if it really doesn't work. And their value might be a little bit less, but it won't be completely diminished. And it could be better.
Well, I think that most people just don't want to be totally depressed, you know, at the end of all this thing. And I think that as long as you feel like you could build something out of it and that there's not going to be some moment of 2 or 3 years of total futility, I think people really are looking for that at some point. That you just don't blow everything up to the point of not being able to win over 20 games, you know, next season or for the next couple of seasons. So, obviously, one of the best in the market, if not the best in the market, Ben Anderson. You can hear him every day with Jake Scott, 10 to noon, Jake and Ben, and then also read his byline there at KSL Sports. Ben, we'll talk to you later, man. Thanks for hanging out.
Thanks, guys.
There you go. We'll take the break. I get positive vibes, you know. When Ben comes on, I feel a little bit better about the – plus he has, like, a good business way of just being like, look, it's just – no offense, just business. Get rid of this guy, add this guy. Pascal Siakam coming to the Jazz. You know, the thing about that is does it feel like a big enough move? You know, I think a lot of people look and they go, is that a big enough move? Are the names big enough? You know, is that a little part of you that sees the whole Kyrie Irving thing where he's going back and forth about whether or not he's going to actually return to the Nets? There's always a little part of a Jazz fan that, like, sits there and goes, ooh, maybe they get Kyrie Irving somehow. Now, Kevin Durant might have something to say about that because I think he wants to play with Kyrie Irving, but I don't know if the management loves – they obviously don't love what they had to deal with last year and sometimes what they have to deal with Kyrie, but maybe he comes and boosts things up here in Utah for a while. See, there's that thing. What's Damian Lillard going to do? What's his future look like?
Yeah, but isn't he the same kind of player that Donovan is?
Oh, for sure. But I'm saying, like, if you start talking about moving things around, moving pieces around, there's always stuff out there.
What if you move Donovan to the point guard?
That's what I said, main ball handler. Make him the guy. Make him be the facilitator. It'd be kind of an interesting move. All right. We'll take the break. We'll come back. We've got more to chat about here on the program. When we return, got ourselves a little discussion about the college football playoff and what NIL has to do with some of these things. Gary Barta, athletic director for Iowa, and also last year's college football playoff commissioner or chairperson. What do they call him? President of the universe? Either way, he was the head of the college football playoff committee. We'll chat about what some of the comments were about what he wants to bring back to be able to curb some of the NIL. The reality is anytime you try to curb the NIL stuff, you're going to get some pushback. So we'll talk about that next. Stay with us. Unrivaled continues 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, all right?
On 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Unrivaled continues. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's just because, I mean, the Mavericks and Suns game is firing up tonight at 7:30. But they're trying to push this American Track League on ESPN currently. Are we on the deuce? We're on the deuce. Are we on ESPN too? I mean... oof. I'm glad it's
I can
not on
change
the,
that.
Yeah. I don't want to watch the American Track League. I mean, listen, you talk about places that are trying to get the mainstream sport, the mainstream TV situation going on. I don't think track is it. I have a very specific schedule with watching track, and that's every 4 years during the summertime. And I like to, Scott, I don't know if you knew this, but I was a very middle-of-the-road discus thrower in high school. I mean, I carry the torch for the old the field portion of the track and field. That's the thing that they're like, hey, are you chubby? Yes. Can we get you to throw a shot put or discus? Sure. That was pretty good.
Were you any good?
I was way good. Well, I mean, that's pretty good.
Way good. You threw the discus?
Yes.
That's kind of a special technique.
I got to state, one region, got
don't you kind of flick it out of the back of your hand?
Not the back, the front.
You do it out
push
of the
push it off the front fingers, yes.
You do?
Out of the back of the hand. What are you talking about?
I would love when people would come out and they try to throw like a frisbee.
Yeah.
Kind of tough to do. No, I'll teach you how to do it one day. We'll just go out and do a video. Oh, we still haven't tried the – should we bust out the should we bust out the Mountain Dew, spicy Mountain Dew?
Yeah.
What do you mean after the show?
After the show.
No.
No. Well, we've been doing this too long.
I know. We're doing – Jeremy – Yes, it is happening next hour. All during right. the NFL roundup, we're going to bust out the spicy Mountain Dew. Jeremy went and bought it. It's been cooling, not in a fridge. Oh, it is now. It was in the server room, chilling in the server room.
Yeah. That's like 40 degrees.
Though. Well, I know, but I'm just saying it's still. We're going to drink the spicy Mountain Dew. The Flamin' Hot Mountain Dew coming up next hour. Mostly just because I want to see Scott drink it. It's definitely against soda. It's definitely against our soda weight loss situation. It's also against actual soda, S-O-D-A, like to put spiciness in soda, but I'm interested to see what's going on. I'll try it. I'll try anything once. That's kind of my deal. Scott, Gary Barta, he's the guy who ran the college – well, at least he was the head of the college football playoff committee last year, says if you're going to kill NIL – shenanigans, which is what you want to do. You don't want it to get too out of control. But as Tom Murphy from the Arkansas beat writer told us last hour, that thing's already out of the bottle. You can't do it. It's already out of the bottle. I mean, that's a guy at a school in the SEC that when you asked about NIL, he goes, oh, yeah, it's going nice. Like, you know, all these other schools are like, yeah, we've had a few deals here and there. It's a little bit like it's a little bit obscure, kind of, even at Utah and BYU, even though you have the Built Bar deal, you're kind of like, are these guys making money? What kind of money are they making? But down at Arkansas, that's one of those places, and then the SEC, it's those places where they have to squash the recruiting that goes along with NIL. So that's what they want to get rid of. And he says, Gary Barta says this, if we can't totally control name, image, likeness, then let's go back to putting a 1 year stop on transfers. You can transfer. You don't have to lose your scholarship, but you have to sit out a year because we can control that, and we want to be able to slow down name, image, likeness deals. The problem is Gary Barta represents old guy, old school thinking of this, and all this comes across as is a guy who doesn't want to see these guys take advantage and make money. And this is exactly why they've had to come out and say you cannot stop it, because these kids deserve to make money off of their name, image, likeness, because frankly you've done it forever, Gary Barta.
Yeah, I don't think you can like control what that is. I think it's more of define what it is, because I don't know that they've totally defined like here's the parameters. It's just kind of they're able to go profit off of their name and their image and their likeness. And what does that mean? And you know, when we had Darlene, right? Carter,
yeah.
From CW Urban, she was like, you know, cause the whole thing about it's about an influencer. And that's so arbitrary. There's no way you can rein that in. Like you can't, that in and of it, because you can't quantify it. You can't say, well, we will give you X dollars for this service because, that's the market value on it. And you can't quantify the value of an influencer. All these people that, social media influencers, it's a new thing. It's a new trend in marketing and promoting your business. It's called streaming. It's called social media. It's called where all the eyeballs are, and people want to sell their products where the eyeballs are, and they recognize these athletes as influencers. And there's no way.
You know,
there's
it's
just
funny
no
is,
way you he can says, look, just control it.
He says, "Well, look, you got to slow this stuff down. You got to sit out a year because we can control that, and we need to slow down the name, image, likeness deals." And then he turns back around and goes, hey, once a student is there and they're committed to a school and they've sat out that year, then you can put together a name, image, likeness package that you can benefit from. I think guys like Gary Barta are totally archaic in their way of thinking.
Yeah, I mean, there's
this
just,
is about the student. It's not about you and what it does for you and your program. It's not about you.
We're in a free market society, okay? The market will ultimately dictate what happens. But to artificially manipulate or control it, or I mean, it may be even illegal for him to say, "Well, no, we're gonna
let's slow this thing down."
Yeah, I mean,
just saying that is terrible.
Yeah,
well, let's slow this thing down. Don't recruit with it. I get you've got to put you've got to squash not having kids at the school yet and putting money in front of them like that. But what you can't do is go, "Hey, now that you're Kentucky, guess what? We got that KFC deal." Is that weird that I, is that dumb that I would have thought they'd have a KFC? Why, if you're Kentucky, why don't you have a KFC deal?
You would think.
Settle down.
Well, but how can you like penalize someone because they have, you know, they're popular. They can actually generate revenue.
Yeah.
And you're saying, "No, we're going to, if you want to generate revenue, you're going to have to pay, you're going to have to sit out." That's insane.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we got Mitch Harper, our BYU insider. We'll chat a little bit about this, the future of Utah, the future of BYU, the future of Utah State. Will these teams ever play each other again? You know what's popped up from all this Utah State off of the schedule thing, Scott?
No, I don't.
It's turned into, "Hey, Utah, you afraid to schedule BYU going into the future a little bit more? Like in 2023? I mean, let's figure this thing out. You don't want BYU?" We'll talk to Mitch around the corner here. Stay with us. Unrivaled continues, 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, everybody, settle down. Unrivaled continues. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Scott put his jacket back on in the studio. We have no control over the air in this place.
It's hot. It's cold.
Are we being punked right now? Like, what's going on? Am I going through menopause?
I know I am. Cold sweats.
Scott is for sure.
So, you know what's, like, it's almost...
What?
I get anxiety over it. It's the pole vault in track and field. I do. I just, like, they're running down the track.
You see the bend on that thing.
It's just got to snap it. And it has in the past before.
That's the problem, is that there are videos out there of it snapping. Yeah. We're watching these track and field championships or whatever on this American Track League that we finally turned the station. But you're right. And listen, that's it's a little bit like when you see a flimsy looking chair as a big guy when you walk into a room, and you go, "I'll just stand next to the wall here. I'll be fine over here." They go, no, sit down right here. And you go, nah. You see how flimsy those legs look? It's fine. I'm not going to do it. Let me see here, Scott. We got a ton to get through still. Mitch Harper, our BYU insider, is going to join us in just a minute here, and. You know, the news obviously today is BYU and Utah State going to have their series canceled, basically, after this season's game. 2023 will be the first time that BYU, Utah, and Utah State won't play each other in football in quite some time. Now, I don't know if they didn't play each other in 2020, COVID year, but that doesn't count. But because you couldn't really control that schedule. But when it comes down to where all these teams sort of land, it's weird to think that, and maybe I'm making more of a thing, and I every person I've heard talking about this today goes, "You know, this really, the person who loses on this is the fan." And I'm like, well, it's not like no game is going to be. Scott's doing a face like now, like, give me a break. So why don't you think that the fan's going to be upset about a game like this? Because Utah State looks forward to playing BYU every year. BYU
which fan?
Pretends like they don't.
Okay, here's the thing. Utah State is probably really glad they had this game. They're going to find another opponent, no big deal. BYU is going to get into the Big 12, and that's going to be – like, they're going to be happy to get through their non-conference schedule. Can't wait to get these games over so we can actually play the games that really matter to us.
Could you imagine – this?
I mean, that's really what it is.
This brings into focus the fact that – and I think BYU fans, until it actually happens, there are these moments that I think we all get knowing that we're going to be covering BYU in the Big 12, that you go, oh, man, they're going to be playing games that really freaking matter.
Yes.
Week after
they'll
week.
They'll have all conference players. They can have championships. They can have records that they've they set nice, in the conference.
They've had nice window dressing games, to Tom Holmoe's credit, over the last 10 years. It's been a tremendous job putting those games on the schedule. But ultimately, when they beat Wisconsin, you know, at the beginning of the year, you know, when they were number 6 in the country, and right. You go, that's awesome. When they beat USC in overtime, when they beat Tennessee at Tennessee, those are all games you go, yes. And you're going to have a lot of those games still on the schedule. But then when you get into conference play, and I was hearing somebody go, I don't know, who's like a bad team in the Big 12? I don't know, like a Kansas State. And I'm going, one of BYU's best wins in their program history, I don't think I'm overstating this, is when they won that Cotton Bowl game against, drum roll please, Kansas State. And I get it, you know, Bill Snyder had his program for 1,000 years that he put together there. But even your games against Kansas State, against Iowa State, against Baylor, against Texas Tech, going into the future, all those weeks are going to be so much better.
They matter.
Football season is going to be so much better. And you know what you're going to do? You're likely going to forget about how often BYU and Utah State are not playing anymore.
You're going to go, oh, yeah, I remember back.
Yeah, they used to play that.
They used to play
that. You talk about times they're going to forget where the wagon wheel is. They better put it in a storage place where they know, and then set a reminder on Siri where you put the wagon wheel after whoever wins this game in 2022.
Have you seen the wagon wheel?
Yeah, I have.
It's kind of
– I've lifted it. It's hefty.
Rather stout.
It's hefty.
Yeah.
It sat in those BYU offices for quite some time.
It's not rickety at all.
No. It's solid. Yeah. Joining us on the program, a man who's also hefted the wagon wheel. I don't know, Mitch, have you picked up that wagon wheel? I know everybody talks about how heavy it is, but it was always in that corner. And I went over and gave it a lift one time. It's a heavy little piece of hardware there.
It is. I lifted that thing once before the 2019 game, and it's no joke. It's a big trophy, but clearly not big enough to stay on BYU schedules going forward.
Why is that a big timing move, or is it just a function of what's going on here? And really. It's the best way to move forward in the way that you're going to be putting your schedules together.
Yeah, I don't think it's a big timing move at all. I think you kind of saw that in the statements from BYU and Utah State ADs. There's a good working relationship between BYU and Utah State. I think it's just a situation, though, where, and I've said this to you guys before, with, you know, Utah State, their venue, their stadium, they don't typically host Power 5 teams. And, you know, even during the days when Lavelle was the coach at BYU, you know, BYU and Utah State were typically 2-for-1s, 3-for-1s. Now with independence, it's been a situation where it's been home and home, and the rise of Utah State's program has been noticeable over the past decade. So it's made more sense to have home and homes the last 10 or so years. But going forward in the Big 12, when you have only 3 non-conference openings, or at most 4, but this seems to indicate 3, you know, it's just kind of a byproduct of now the new landscape. And if you're ultimately going to have some sort of in-state rivalry or a rivalry in general on the future schedules, you're going to put Utah as the priority over Utah State. That's just kind of the way it goes.
Well, that's provided that Utah wants to have that rivalry.
See?
I'm just kidding. Nah. I'm kidding. Look, what is the strategy for a non-conference schedule then for BYU going into the Big 12, if it's a 9-game regular season?
You know, so next year, 2023, would look like Tennessee, Arkansas, and Southern Utah. That's, you know, pretty good, where you're locking in 11 Power 5 games in 2023, by far the most BYU's ever played. Then 2024, it really becomes about that Utah game, because you can kind of see a situation where BYU is going to have at least one Power 5 team on these non-conference schedules. And I think that that's going to be kind of a theme, and I think that that's an important piece, because, you know, the Big 12 is just not going to get the benefit of the doubt on much. So I think you got to keep one Power 5 team on the future schedules. If Utah's gone, I think it kind of, you know, makes things a little bit easier to forecast with Utah. If Utah's still factored into the schedules, then you're cutting games like maybe a Miami or a Virginia Tech or NC State, all these different series, or even Stanford, a series that, you know, BYU's got about five or six games in right. the future schedules against, those then go by the wayside. So, you know, that's where it's really going to come down to. What's going to be interesting going forward is, you know, because I think there's going to be at least one P5 on pretty much every year. It's just, will it be Utah or will it be, you know, some of these other ACC, Big Ten, you know, Big 12 or Pac-12 programs that BYU scheduled in future years?
You know, we're looking kind of, we're projecting some of these games in the future, and there are a lot of really big programs on there. Like you were saying, you'd hate to see some of these Miamis or NC State even, you know, kind of go off the schedule. And so what's the best way to schedule those games in the future? Are you, I know that people have this idea of, well, you got to have kind of a guaranteed win, you know, kind of scheduled into there. I don't know what the obsession is of having these FCS teams, but why would there be, why wouldn't there be a place? Is it because those Power Five schedules are so aggressive? And so you go, well, you got to throw us a cupcake in there somewhere. Or why is it that the BYU couldn't be able to put a Utah State on there in place of like a South Florida in the future?
Yeah, I think BYU honestly should take that approach, you know, playing like maybe the Utah States or an additional Power Five team, because, you know, when you're seeing the reports of the SEC being okay with staying at a 4-team playoff, sound the alarm for the Big 12, because the Big 12 won't get anyone in the 4-team playoff. I mean, that's, you're then going to fight a massive uphill battle in that league without Texas and Oklahoma to get into the 4-team playoffs. So you probably want to schedule maybe two, you know, Power Five teams in the non-conference plus your Big 12 schedule to have a puncher's chance at being in the playoff. Again, I just think that, you know, the Big 12 conference is going to be a really competitive league. It might be the league that has the most mystery every single year. And I think they've got to be incredibly creative with their willingness to schedule games from a TV perspective and just be kind of the wild card in the TV landscape in Power Five football. But perception wise, there's no marquee brand. And because you don't have a marquee brand like a USC, like an Ohio State, like an Alabama, you're going to fight a battle. And that's why I think BYU still has to probably remain aggressive when it comes to these non-conference schedules, because if this playoff stays at four teams, when you see the SEC being willing to stand pat at four, reportedly, that is a big concern for the Big 12. So then, to me, the viewpoint of how Homo approaches the non-conference schedules has to change. If it goes to a 12-team playoff, then I think you sack a Utah State. You then get rid of maybe two Power Fives in the non-conference, and then you just go one P5 plus some G5s and an FCS. But if it's a 4-team playoff, you got to ramp it up, because then you're just fighting an uphill battle even more than usual.
Yeah, I think you see that in the Pac-12. There's a willingness to schedule like Utah going to Florida and then returning the next year, and a lot of schools are trying to get these, you know, marquee wins or more recognition or more relevance through their scheduling than maybe had they, you know, had a softer non-conference schedule. So I'm curious, Mitch, what's going on at BYU right now that we should know that we don't know?
I think with the BYU football program, I think one of the big things that's happening right now is they are swinging big on the recruiting trail. You know, BYU, this is their first spring evaluation period in recruiting, and they are offering a lot of prospects, 2023, 2024, 2025 even. But they are going to try to be in the mix for a lot more, you know, high profile recruits. And I think that's noteworthy because you're seeing a shift. Usually it's been when you extend offers from BYU, it's maybe these guys that just completely off the grid. They're not in the recruiting databases. They're just trusting their own evaluations and they like the potential from the, you know, just the measurables and whatnot. Now they're being more strategic with their offers, and they're pursuing more stars you're seeing in the offers. It's going to be very interesting coming up in June when they have their summer camps, you know, how aggressive they are in offers, because everything is more strategic now, it feels like, in the Big 12, whereas before it used to be get as many commits as possible, load them up, and, you know, hold on to these guys before signing day in December. you know, now there's only four commits in 2023, but they're offering a lot of high-profile guys, and they're bringing in official visitors coming up in June. There's some of the top recruits out west and in college football or in high school football coming up in this cycle. I think that's kind of quietly a storyline that, you know, BYU's just embracing what Power 5 football is. It's not anything revolutionary, but again, BYU is trying to expand their reach, go into more battles than just simply, you know, trust the evaluation. We're going to go with our guys and see what we feel is best. They're doing some more star chasing. I think that's noteworthy what they're doing during the spring evaluation period.
So is Arch Manning on the radar then?
Yeah, hey.
No Arch Manning, but, you know, it is interesting. And, you know, I will say they did go against the grain when it came to the quarterback position, pursuing, you know, a Springville quarterback. I mean, I should probably ask you what you might know about this kid and Ryder Burton, Scott. But they are trusting their own evaluation when it comes to that spot. With Ryder Burton, he's been working with John Beck at 3D QB. You know, he's a guy that didn't start in high school until his junior year, which it's not a surprise that he didn't have really any scholarship offers when you don't get your first start until your junior year, because with high school quarterback recruiting, that's going on when they're freshmen and sophomores in high school. And as we've seen with many programs over the years, they'll stick with one guy in a recruiting class with a quarterback, and they will just roll with that guy to kind of show that utmost loyalty to a player. So, but BYU's, you know, pretty bullish on Ryder Burton and what he could potentially be. I would still imagine, though, they're going to add another quarterback for the 2023 class, whether it be from the portal or, you know, high school ranks or whatnot. There's got to be a lot of development from Jacob Conover and Solje Maiava-Peters and Cade Finnegan this year to give maybe Aaron Roderick more confidence about the pipeline going into the Big 12 conference. But, you know, Roderick has had a lot of success with identifying quarterbacks when no one else is, you know, thinking much of them, like a Jackson Dart, like a Zach Wilson. So I think he kind of gets a little bit of the benefit of the doubt from his view, his big picture perspective, a guy like Ryder Burton.
Yeah, Ryder's a kid with a lot of confidence, led the Red Devils to the state championship, struggled in the state championship. He's not short on confidence. Yeah. I will tell you that right now. He's a confident kid.
But is he short?
I don't think he's a short kid, but you know, when you have these kids that are willing to, you know, because he's got to go to California. He's a high school kid, and like Zach Wilson, there's this willingness to put in the time and the effort to actually, you know, improve yourself. That's a serious commitment, and you see that from these kids. You know that they're serious about what happens, and here's a kid that just continually gets better and better. And I think you look at you watch these kids where they haven't hit their ceiling yet, and they certainly a lot of talent.
Mitch, if you look at what BYU is doing, what they're kind of kind of prepping for when it comes to the Big 12, basketball, football, all those things. On the football side, what do you anticipate 2023 looks like? I mean, are they going to end up being able to play Texas and Oklahoma possibly for those first 2 years, or is that not really a deal? And then what do you expect in terms of how much success they'll have right off the bat when they get into the conference?
Yeah, the Big 12 schedule will be released in October, and you know, I think there's a, you know, great chance that, you know, BYU is going to have a chance to maybe host an Oklahoma or a Texas, because I think that, you know, this new Big 12 and whoever the commissioner ends up being, I think they just want to give, you know, these new members a chance to really kind of showcase themselves. And I think there's going to be spots where they're going to play the Texases and Oklahomas. And, you know, I always bang the drum that perception sometimes is more important in college sports than actual results, sadly. And if you go in and beat an Oklahoma or a Texas, that's a perception shifter. And then you can maybe leverage that when you go to the negotiating table come February 2024 with the Big 12 TV deals. And maybe you could say, hey, BYU beat an Oklahoma or they beat a Texas. And this can turn into something where maybe there's some tangible evidence to suggest that, you know, these programs, they might not have the sexiness of a Texas and Oklahoma, but they're going to be good football programs. They're going to be all in and invested more than they've ever been before now that they have more Power 5 resources. So, yeah, October is when we'll see the 2023 Big 12 schedule. And I think that, you know, Cougar fans, they seem obviously really excited about it. Season ticket sales for 2022 are far exceeding what they've been in recent years. And BYU's seen an uptick in attendance in 2019 and in 2021. And it's only going to go up from here, I think, as far as season ticket sales, because I can only imagine the chance to see a Texas or Oklahoma come to Provo again is one of the big reasons I think BYU fans are so excited for those first couple years. And I think Texas and Oklahoma, they're going to want to stay in the Big 12. I think obviously they want to get to the SEC as soon as they could, ideally. But what's different with them compared to the AAC teams is that they can't negotiate their buyout. If they leave early, they're forfeiting their grant of rights, all of it. With the Big 12, how that contract is legally termed, there's not much of a buyout option like the AAC schools have in their conference. And I think that Texas and Oklahoma need as much of a ramp-up phase as anyone going into the SEC, because they've kind of carved out a nice little niche of being these, you know, big, massive programs in a league that's nowhere near as deep as the SEC. They're going to need some time to really kind of readjust their rosters and how they build their personnel and ramp up, just like some of these AAC and BYU are doing going to the Big 12.
Mitch Harper, he hosts Cougar Sports Saturday on KSL News Radio, our sister station, noon to 3 on Saturdays, and also all things BYU. You can get the everything read right there on KSLSports.com. Mitch, thanks for hanging out, man. Thanks for breaking it down for us. And we're just friggin' dying to get going into some more football coverage here. We're over 100 days out, but not that far from getting into the double digits of counting down. So we appreciate you hanging out, man.
Yeah, always a pleasure. I always tell myself that, too. Once the calendar turns to June, then we got media days, we got summer camps, then July more media days, and before we know it, it's fall camp. So it'll be here before we know it. Can't wait.
Then you have this. You have Memorial Day. Then you have just after Memorial Day. Then you have July 4th, and then all these things that just are totally in the way of getting to football and college football season. So, all right, Mitch, we'll talk to you again, man.
Okay,
we'll take the break here. When we come back, NFL Roundup. We're going to try the stupidity that is Flamin' Hot Mountain Dew around the corner as well. So stay right here with us. Unrivaled continues. 97.5 1280 The Zone.
Here we go.
Go get it. Let's go.
That's it.
It's time for the Unrivaled NFL Roundup. Premium grade A NFL news from a former NFL quarterback.
Go away, son.
And, the other guy on 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, everybody, welcome on in. It is Unrivaled 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network, powered by KSL Sports. NFL Roundup music, of course, means we're going to be chatting about some NFL things. We've also got
schedule.
Yeah, the schedule's coming out, and much of the chagrin of our producer, Jeremy, we're forcing him to he wanted to do this post-show. You and I don't have time for this after the show.
No.
Come on.
We're out there.
We're doing it right now. We're doing it right now. So Jeremy's just walked into the studio. He's just handed me a cup. Why'd you put so much in this dang cup? My heavens. So Jeremy bought the Scott's over there sniffing it. Jeremy bought the Flamin' Hot Cheeto Mountain Dew. It's just Flamin' Hot, though, right? Not Cheetos. It doesn't have a Cheeto flavor to it. It's just Flamin' Hot.
It's just hot.
What's the descriptor of the flavor here? I'm going to look it up. So, Scott, tell me what you're smelling there while I'm looking this up.
Well, it looks like, I don't know, orange something.
Yeah, it's orange something.
Almost blood orange.
Okay, so here's...
Am I supposed to drink it now?
Sure, why not? So here's
I'm
what we're
going to
do.
Try it right now.
Scott's going to try it right now. I'm going to look what the actual description of the flavor is, because I want to know what they're saying that it actually is.
Yeah, so this is...
Dew flavor.
Mountain Dew.
Flamin' Hot.
Flamin' Hot.
Spicy meat sweet. Dew flavor.
Spicy meat?
Yeah.
Sweet?
No, not spicy meat. Spicy meats sweet.
Oh, it meats?
Yeah, like they meet together on the street. Yeah, and then one stabs the other one. Dew flavor.
So, wait, spicy meets sweet? Here we go.
Dew flavor with bursts of heat and lime
flavor.
It's
like sweet and hot.
Hot, yeah, it's hot and sour soup, but like carbonated in Mountain Dew. Here goes Scott. He's drinking it. Okay. All right, so then there's going to be – now he's staring at the cup, wondering about his you start talking about it, and I'm going to start drinking my version.
Actually, it makes my throat feel better. It's not really that –
Okay, I don't hate the initial flavor. It's got that orange citrusy.
Yeah.
Like the live wire.
Catches my throat.
Whoop.
Is that
got
hot?
It.
Hot to you?
Well, it's not hot. I just got a little bit of the tingle. I got the tingle.
Yeah, it's.
I got the tingle in the back of the throat.
I don't. I'm not. Maybe I have like. Like my mouth has been beat up, like so spice to me
so
is like
it isn't it's, like not.
Nah, it's got to be really.
No, it's not real.
I feel it down my throat a little bit. Now I'm feeling it in my stomach.
See, I got a little bit of the spice going on. The thing is I would actually prefer it to be spicier. If they're gonna do it, they got to go at it.
Like it's gotta hurt.
Well, I'm not even saying like ghost pepper hurt. Overall, though, I don't hate the flavor.
It's not too bad.
I haven't had a full sugar. Taste of soda in quite some time, and I decided to break my with the flaming hot. So there you go. We tried it. We did it.
Yeah.
Move on. Heat and Sixers battling it out here. I wanted to bring this one up, Scott, on the NFL side of things. The schedule's been
I'm kind of feeling it now.
Oh no.
Yeah. Didn't before, but whoa. Okay.
You're not supposed to like,
grabbing my throat a little bit.
You're not supposed to get high off of it. Jeez. I'm feeling it now, dude. I'm not feeling it at all.
I've never been high in my life.
I know.
I wouldn't even know what it would mean.
So Tom Brady and the Bucks, our desire at the beginning of the show was for them to be that opening Thursday night game with the Rams.
Yeah.
Not going to happen, but Tom Brady and the Bucks are going to open up at Dallas.
At Dallas.
Sunday Night Football Week 1. That's a great start.
No, I love that.
America's team and Tom Brady facing off in Jerry World on week one. So there's at least that rollout.
It's America's team and America's player.
Now, the full season gets opened up on a Thursday night with the Bills going to the reigning Super Bowl champion L.A. Rams. So that's a good one to start with.
Yeah.
Two teams who we could – I mean, if you're the NFL, that might be your Super Bowl too. Bills
it's,
Rams?
It's a possibility.
Could very well be your...
That may be what they're thinking right there.
So here's the one that I love the most. Because for as much as I like my Seahawks, I love awkwardness more than anything.
I like there
to be a little bit of uncomfortableness.
Yeah.
That's why we drank the spicy Mountain Dew on the air. Didn't provide as much... I'm hoping that the spicy Mountain Dew version of the first week of scheduling is that Monday Night Football game. When the Denver Broncos go up to my Seattle Seahawks... And Russell Wilson, he'll get a standing ovation and all that stuff, whatever. And the reality is the Seahawks are going to lose that game by 22 points. It's going to be a 41-17 type game. And it's not even going to be close. And it's going to be – and it's like watching your ex with a better-looking person.
I think
– it's not going to be good, but you know what? I'm here for the drama. I'm here for the NFL, and that's what we're getting.
But you're also getting, like, the Cincinnati Bengals are going to be worth watching.
Yes.
The Colts could be interesting with Matt Ryan. The Chargers, where do they go? The Raiders with a new coach. What do the Chiefs look like without Tariq Hill?
Look, even want to see what happens in Jacksonville, right?
Yeah, right, right.
Who's the least interesting team that you don't
Zach
care
Wilson,
about?
Zach Wilson, there's
yes,
a lot
the
there.
Yes.
You know, even Tua down in Miami with, you know, he's got
with
a
Tyreek
lot,
Hill.
A lot more weapons. What is that? How does that change things?
I'm still drinking this. I don't know why.
So there's a lot of really,
you know, what team I could
really
never...
good storylines to follow in the NFL early on, and I think all the way throughout the season.
I could go the whole season and not hear one word about the Washington Commandos.
You probably won't,
and be okay.
I mean, you talk about a sad narrative. I mean, you think of Carson Wentz and like, where he was on the verge of being like the MVP,
a garbage owner,
winning a Super Bowl. Then he goes to the Colts and is reunited. With, you know, someone who really had his back and apparently he didn't. And they're just like, this guy's terrible. Get him out of here. And just, what's the worst place you could send a guy? I mean, really, the worst organization in professional football is the Washington Commandos. Yeah, absolutely.
The Commandos. We've really made it a thing. It's just part of our parlance now.
I like it. It's a better name for me.
It is a better name.
Yeah.
I agree. So there you go. On the schedule side of things.
even if Baker Mayfield is on the roster, apparently, according to the Cleveland Browns insiders, if Baker Mayfield's on the roster, they won't start him if Deshaun Watson is suspended.
That's when you know you have been banished.
So what's the next option there?
That's mean and spiteful
what's
right there.
What's the next option? Jacoby Brissett. Jacoby Brissett's going to be the guy. And it looks like that would actually be the thing. They would opt to not play him. And the reason is, Scott, why do you do that? Is it the key? Because if you're him, you want to play and do well to kind of prove yourself because you want to go to a team. And if you're the Browns, you'd want his value to go up, right? Or do you feel like his value is exactly what it should be and he's never going to get any better than that? What's the thinking behind that if you're the Browns to not play him?
Well, a lot of it could be injury. And a lot of it could be like we don't want to look like we've made a bad decision here. We've moved on from you, and that's that. And so, I mean, if they ever got forced to play him, they'd probably play like an emergency quarterback, like a wide receiver quarterback in college.
Remember that when the Broncos did that? Darrell, what was your name again? You're starting this week. I don't even think they counted him starting as a quarterback there either because it wasn't technically
– right.
That's like weird. Anyway, bottom line is nobody wants Baker Mayfield, and it's a sad deal, which is wild. He is definitely – he is like so far from being one of the worst quarterbacks that we've seen shifted around. I can't believe that they're keeping him off that he can't find a roster to play with. So there you go. So Jordan Love apparently has been given a trade value grade, and that value is either a second or third round quarterback or a second or third rounder. But the reality is that apparently because they really don't know what kind of a guy he's going to be for a team, he'd be more likely worth about a fourth or a fifth round of trade value. They haven't given this guy hardly much of a chance.
Well, I don't think they need to do anything with him right now because Aaron Rodgers is over 40.
He needs a backup.
And I know they're like they've committed to him for quite a while, but you're one play away from who knows, and you're a lot closer to the end of your career if you're Aaron Rodgers. And this is a guy that knows your system. Now they don't know what this guy's capable of. They really don't. Until a guy's really given an opportunity to really play, then you'll know. But right now, no one has any idea. So
Mayfield,
I just sit pat on him. I don't
Baker
think
Mayfield or Jordan Love. Who do you?
I'd rather see what Jordan. I'd rather with. See what Jordan Love can do at this.
Really?
Point. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, you don't know.
I know, and that's why I think Baker Mayfield's way more of a winner than people are giving him credit for.
I don't.
Way more than Jordan Love has proven, which is nothing. Actually, I mean, they had him play a few games last year, and he didn't look good. We're watching this Miami Heat 76ers game, and I think Ben Anderson mentioned Tyler Hero's name as a possibility. You know, I was like, hey, maybe that's one of those guys. That guy he shoots so many dadgum threes, and he's so good at it that you go, well, why wouldn't the Jazz look for a guy like him? But I don't know. I don't know. End of the first quarter, 28-25, the Heat are ahead of the Philadelphia 76ers. Next up, Scott. Apparently, the Chicago Bears have signed your favorite backup to the backup. Nate Peterman's getting his shot at the Bears. As we're talking about all this, and you go, yeah, Baker Mayfield's not worth anything. Jordan Love, I don't know if he's worth more of a four or fifth round or whatever. And the Bears are giving Nate Peterman a shot. Nate Peterman is getting signed all across the league. I mean, that's pretty sad to be the backup to a guy in Justin Fields that feels already like he could be on the track to being a backup in his career too. But Nate Peterman, man, Scott, you even told me. You said if you want to teach your kid to be something, middle reliever or a backup quarterback in the NFL, make $8 million a year. What's Peterman going to make, though? What's Peterman going to make? Nobody knows. 1 year contract. That's all it says.
It'll be over $1 million.
You think so?
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, is he a veteran?
Yeah, he's been around a while.
Huh.
Started in Buffalo. Yeah,
he did. Oh yeah, yeah. No, he's been in the league. Yeah, he's a veteran minimum 1.2. Boom.
Probably what he'll get. I'll bet that's what he'll get.
All right.
It's probably why they signed him.
Let's take the break here. We'll come back. We have our 2 minute drill around the corner. Don't want to miss the 2 minute drill. So much more to go that we're going to jam into the end of this hour. So stay right here. It's 97.5, 1280, the Zone of the Zone Sports Network.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5, 1280, the Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network, powered by KSL Sports. Thanks for being with us. The NFL schedule has been released. Or is they're kind of rolling it out slowly. But the bottom line is that opening Thursday night game is going to be the Rams hosting the Bills. Good start to the season. And then that Sunday night, for Sunday night football, the most watched football game all week in America, is going to be the Dallas Cowboys hosting Tampa Tom Brady. I'm excited, man. I know that I don't care about the rollout of the schedule as much as I go, oh, that means we're getting a little bit closer to actual football season. I mean, it could not come soon enough. Scott and I are watching the Heat Sixers game here in the studio. Every person I look at on the court now, I just look at and go, ooh, who'd be good in the Utah Jazz uniform? Like that, it's like every person now I look around at. Who'd be good in a Jazz uniform? By the way, George Niang, his number in Philadelphia is number 20. If you were wondering from
what are the
show,
odds?
What are the odds? I kept saying it was
31.
I said, well, his Jazz number is 31, but he's 20 there in Philly. And he's playing a lot tonight. Because I think they had an injury on the Philadelphia side of things. So, going to be kind of expected to go a little bit further in this stretch here. Scott, this music in the background means one thing only, and that is we have the two-minute drill on top of us here where we do a lot of fun things. So, what do we do in the two-minute drill? Please explain.
Well, late in a football game, you go down the field, kick a field goal, score a touchdown, don't have a lot of time, so you hurry. Our show's the same way. We still have a lot to talk about, but not a lot of time, so we talk a little bit about a lot of things. Hurry up, finish the show, go home happy with the trophy, because everyone goes home with the trophy. And we go home with a bunch of desserts. Plethora, as we like to say, including chocolate souffle, donuts, and no candy.
No candy.
From Sam Farnsworth.
I will say right now, though, so Costco, I think Sam's is the same thing. I don't want to just, big box stores.
Okay.
For Mother's Day, my wife got from one of the kids the bag of s'mores.
Bag of s'mores?
Bag of s'mores.
Okay, never seen it.
You don't want to see it. Because it's chocolate covered, like Golden Graham cereal,
mm-hmm.
and chocolate covered marshmallows all uh-huh. in this bag. And it is a delight.
Oh.
It will make you fat. Soda weight loss, be damned. You will. So I'm just going to say, if you're going to avoid one thing to keep yourself on course, it's going to be that bag of Fannie Mae s'mores. Okay? But add it to the list of desserts that we could eat on this, or that we don't want to eat on this program. So, Scott, first up on the old 2 minute drill here, as we got through a day of mourning because Utah State and BYU aren't going to be playing each other. Real sad day for everybody. But. Do you remember Danny Woodhead?
Yes.
He's a smaller guy.
Yes.
Played, I think, Division III ball in Nebraska or something like that.
Something like that.
And was it the Patriots for a minute? Was it the Chargers for a minute?
Was it a nice, serviceable guy?
Yes. Like he's the guy, if you're going to be, maybe Britton Covey can look at him and go, hey, short stack, although he's a little bit more of a squatty type of a halfback type. But... went to a Super Bowl. He advanced past the local rounds in U.S. Open qualifying.
Yes.
He could be – he's one step away from being able to qualify for the U.S. Open.
Yes.
That would be
amazing.
So cool for somebody to just be like, yeah, played in the league for a minute, and now I'm on to golf. And not only am I on to golf, I'm a really, really good golfer. So,
well, and he said, you know, a lot of guys have a problem when they retire from football. They have a hard time. I actually did the same thing.
You got into golf like way a ton.
I had a goal. I was like, all right, I'm gonna play golf, play on all these little tours. You can find places to go play competitive golf, especially in Florida. And by the time I'm 50, I'm going to try out for the senior tour. See if I can qualify for the senior tour by the time I'm 50.
And?
So I got to scratch.
Yeah.
And I was playing. You know, I was playing.
Playing really good golf.
I play golf every day.
Yes.
Okay. And I, my golf coach, I had a golf coach who actually teaches pros who are on tour. And he's like, yeah, from here to the next level, you won't even see a difference. And you'll work twice as hard. And it became a job to me. And I just kind of was like, yeah, I don't want to do this. This doesn't mean that much to me.
How long was his actual... he's from North Platte, Nebraska, yes.
Yeah.
So he did play. I would not have thought his career was this long.
I didn't either.
My heavens. Yep. The guy played in... So 3 seasons at the Jets, 3 seasons at the Patriots, 4 at the, so 3, 3, and 4, 11 year NFL career. There you go. He's got 15 rushing touchdowns and 17 receiving touchdowns. That's an awesome career.
Yeah.
He played that many years in the NFL. North Platte, Nebraska.
I think it's cool that he's doing this. Good for him.
Went to Chadron State. To play his ball. All right, Scott, next up, Kentucky Derby winner Rich Strike will not be at the Preakness. Apparently needs rest. What's going on here with these horses?
Well, he's probably old, full of adrenaline.
Is that what it was?
And that adrenaline.
Is that what they call it?
Full of adrenaline.
Won't it just be a total sad deal if it ends up that we're awaiting some sort of... Because his jockey already got suspended for... Sonny Leon already got suspended for, what was it, aggressive driving? What was the DUI
reckless
on a horse?
Driving. Crazy driving.
On a horse, though.
On a horse.
Right? But it was him.
He exceeded the speed limit.
He was in the Kentucky Derby, and they said, you won the Kentucky Derby, but you're suspended for, you shouldn't have driven him that hard. This is wild. Isn't that what you want?
I guess there's you like whip the horse too vigorously.
You can.
I don't know.
That's advice from Grandpa. Don't whip the horse too vigorously. You know. Look, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do it. Rich Strike's owner, Rick Dawson, said that our original plan was for Rich Strike to be contingent on the Kentucky Derby. Should we not run in the Derby, we'd go forward to the Preakness. Should we run in the Derby, subject to the race outcome and the condition of the horse? He might need some recovery time and rest. How long do these horses need to rest, Scott? It's a 3.5-minute race.
Yeah, they run pretty fast, though.
Well, is he still winded, like, right now?
Yeah.
Because when's Preakness run? Is it this week? No.
No. It's a week or so.
So
couple
what's the
weeks.
Deal? And then the Belmont Stakes is in June. Is he going to be too? Is he going to be too tuckered out for that too?
So they're going to try to get him ready for that.
Yes, kid, we need you back, man. Rich Strike.
Hey, these horses are highly tuned professional athletes, okay? And they get a little temperamental.
Yeah, well, they said that for sure.
Yeah, you know the balance of oats to hay. You give them too many oats, they get fat and happy.
Oh,
yeah.
That's when you eat them.
Got to keep them lean.
Do you know how much they gave Rich Strike for that win in the Kentucky Derby?
I don't. How much?
Does he have a bank account, the horse? But it says Rich Strike earned $1.86 million for his win.
Oh, yeah?
There you go.
You know, that doesn't seem like that much anymore.
Well, again, what does he get to do with it? Does he let him buy something nice? Apparently, all he's gotten out of it is he's more winded. All right. We're going to come back. More to go on the program. There's your 2-minute drill in the books. We'll be right back. More to go. Unrivaled continues. 97.5, 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.